Blog Talk Radio.
Nowhere near us.
play, how to play it, you know, whether it's disco or rock. But we just went in the studio and we did it. We had champagne in the studio, of course, you know, compliments of the company, and we just laid back and did it. So we hope you enjoy listening to this album half as much as we enjoy playing it for you, because we had a ball. Only real music's gonna last. All that other bullshit is here today and gone tomorrow.
Talking women and vino. The contract like 91 Dan Marino. I swear this guy Michael Rapino's boosting my ego. Overly focused, it's far from the time to rest now. Debate's growing about who they think is the best now. Took a while, got the jokers out of the deck now. I'm holding all the cards and niggas wanna play chess now. I hear you talking, say it twice so I know you meant it. Fuck it, I don't even tend it, they should know who's in it. I'm authentic, real name, no gimmicks, no game, no scrimmage. I ain't playing with you niggas at all. My classmates, they went on to be chartered accountants or work with their parents. But thinking back on how they treated me, my high school reunion might be worth an appearance. Make everybody have to go through security clearance. Tables turn, bridges burn, you live and learn. With the ink, I could murder word of my nigga Irv. Yeah, I swear shit just started clicking, dog. You know it's real when you are who you think you are. You had braces, the all black Maybach, but I'm not a racist. Inside's white in the Katy Perry's faces, yellow diamonds in my Jesus. I just might learn to speak Mandarin, Japanese for the yen that I'm handling. International hoe, that's my handle. My Saint Chongon, light a candle. El Gran Santo on the mantle. In case y'all didn't know, I speak Spanish too. Shout out the World Wide West. Everywhere we go, we leave a worldwide mess. Yes, still rock La Familia. Says a lot about you if you're not feeling us. The homie said, Hov, it ain't many of us. I told him less is more, niggas, plenty of us.
Cash through everything around me. Free.
Niggas is frontin', that's upside down cake. Get them a red nose, they clown cakes. I should've never let you round cake. Look at my neck, I got a carrot cake. Now here's the icing on the cake. I'm just getting started, oh yeah, we got it, bitch. I done made more millionaires than Lotto did. They made millions, Big made millions. Ye made millions, Just made millions. Lior made millions, Cam made millions. Beans will tell you if he wasn't in the ceiling. I'm back in my bag. My eyes bloodshot, but my jet don't lag. A pair of Jordan 3's trying to chase this cab. Gucci airbag just in case we crash. Last night was mad trill. I'm fresh out of Advil, Jesus rather will.
Baby squirrel, use a sexy motherfucker.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're wonderful, flawless, who you were destined. But you walk around here like you wanna be someone else.
Treasure, that is what you Yeah. Go.
You know very well who you are. You're the only one. You got my heart. And you've had a few boys too many. But I'm the only one to wake you up.
It was all a dream.
I reminded the way we could see the so personal. You just felt you still get my love and now you know.
It was all a dream.
Show. Today is Tuesday, February 25, 2014. We are live. We are not Memorex. Want to welcome everyone to the show. I thank the Creator for allowing me another opportunity to be here. As you know, we bring this show, of course, in the spirit of love, truth, peace, freedom, and the pursuit of justice, and also the elimination of illegitimate debt. The call-in number is 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. You can call in and press 1 if you have a question, comment, or concern. The email address for the network is highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com, highfrequencyblogtalk@gmail.com. That is the network email address. You can leave us an email if you have a question, comment, or need the services of any one of the hosts here, which is myself, Brother Sharif, the lead host and founder, Brother Youssef, and also co-founder, Brother Savage, Paul Savage. You can also get on that email contact list to be apprised of any seminars, webinars, events, happenings, great information that comes through when you're on that list. And you can be apprised of the network as a whole as to what we're doing, how we're moving, what our plans are, and our community efforts. If you want to reach Brother Sharif, my email address is staff, S-T-A-F-F, at consumer, C-O-N-S-U-M-E-R, dash, law.com. Staff at consumer, dash, law.com. And on my email address, you'll be apprised of any of my webinars, seminars, information on debt, debt collection, things of that nature, and any information regarding the foreclosure crisis. I will begin sending out those informative emails here in the next couple of weeks. I'm basically now having to spend most of my time addressing questions and the families and communities' issues with regards and respects to debt. Got some interesting news to go over. As you know, at the beginning of the show, we try to go to the mainstream news and see what's going on in the industry of debt, debt collections, i.e. foreclosure and things of that nature. Got a couple of interesting articles we'll just go over, and then we'll hit the lines and go right into the questions and answers and the relief that we are able to provide here as a collective on this network. Don't have any special guests, but as you know, the word is out. And we often get a lot of calls, and, of course, this family circle is vast, and you never know who might show up to either lend their support or bring some needed information to the community. Want to give a shout-out to everybody logged in on the computer in the chat. You know, peace to the many that are in there. Lafayette Williams, Reno Gamble, the Private Authority Group, Truth29. All repeated listeners and supporters of this network. First of all, I want to give shout outs and all praise to everybody that supports this network and particularly this show. The show has grown tremendously. The outpouring of compliments and sentiments and uplifting has been astounding and vast. I really appreciate everybody. Appreciate the blessings that you throw out. I appreciate the prayers that you throw out, and I appreciate the energy that a lot of these messages gives to me and fuel me to keep going. Today, I was in court today helping someone with the trial, so I'm glad I was able to make it on time to get on the network. And once I finish, I have to go back. So, you know, my motivation is the community, because I see the community is being uplifted. I see that everybody is standing up and being responsible for their own affairs, and that motivates me to not miss a show, although there's been a couple I needed to miss. The people hold me liable and responsible for delivering the information, whether it's small or large. So I'm dedicated to you, and this is your show. All right, let's go into some news and see what's going on. In the foreclosure news, again, I've said this for the last, I believe, month or so, last four shows, that it appears as though the court system is catching up to the factual information about these alleged foreclosures. And we all know, if you listen to any one of my shows, I don't believe many of you are in foreclosure, because foreclosure can only be performed as a function of a creditor or a mortgagee or a lender. And for the most part, I can say that most of you do not have one of those identifying people conducting those type actions on your real property. So, but nonetheless, we'll name it foreclosure because that's what they want us to believe, but we know better. It's a new thing going on called robo-testifiers now. As you know, you all know, the robo-signers was a thing where they were executing affidavits and, you know, signing assignments most of you are familiar with, and saying that they knew the truth or veracity of the content of those documents, and they purportedly knew that, you know, the person that was executing those documents was a creditor, and, you know, they had standing and capacity to be able to execute such documents, and the robo-signer thing has been out for the last several years. Well, now they have robo-testifiers now. Compliments of the League Society, some of them, and they have people that actually will come to court and participate in the same behaviors that the robo-signers did, which was to come to court and say that, yes, Mr. Schwartz does owe this loan. He did execute a note and a mortgage on this particular day. He did receive funds for the purchase of that property. The assignment was proper. They reacquired a proper interest in the property. So, you know, they're coming to court on the witness stand. And in this article can be found at MS Fraud. That's www.msfraud.org. For those of you out there, that's a pretty good website. It has a lot of good information, up-to-date information on the foreclosure crisis, debt collection. Very good website. You need to read a lot of the information and articles that are in there. It's a pretty good site. If you go into the law library section of it on the left, they keep a good list of cases even by bank name. So if you have a bank that you're dealing with, you know, and you go into this law library, you know, they categorize it by name. And you can pull up a lot of cases that they've lost and information about that particular masquerading creditor. And you can use that information to provide your affirmative defenses if you're dealing with those particular entities. So take a look at that website. But, you know, they were talking about the robo-testifiers and, you know, the plaintiffs, the bank's attorneys are bringing them in. And obviously if they're testifiers, they're taking the stand, the witness stand, and proffering some sort of facts or testimony about you owing some debt or allegedly owing some debt. I would hate to be one of those robo-testifiers if it was my case. But just so you know, if you're not prepared by listening to a few of the shows on here, you should know that when you have somebody like that in front of you, you should be able to obliterate them with the facts. Because most of the times, most of you that are dealing with foreclosure or a perceived foreclosure or alleged foreclosure, usually your lender or your alleged lender, and you don't know who lent you the money, you just know what the documents say. And that's, if by now you don't know that your documents can't be relied upon, then you haven't been listening enough to my show or to this network, because we've already demonstrated overwhelmingly that you can't believe anything within those documents. But at any rate, you're the only living witness if the bank is dead. That agreement was memorialized by mortgage, deed of trust, security deed. But who's to say that the content and the names, specifically the lender's name that appears in there, really provided the funding for that transaction? And you should know by now that they didn't. Especially if you're dealing with a securitized secondary market loan, you know that they didn't use their own funds. So you have major, major, major defects in your documents. You have major defects, of course, as you know, in your assignments or your transfers, servicing rights. You know, these are all things you have to educate yourself on. And it's not hard to do when you take out the time and stop watching the Kardashians and the Atlanta Housewives and, you know, this and that, you know, cut out the sports a little bit and start taking responsibility of your own situation. Stop depending on gurus and leaders and preachers and things of that nature to tell you what you should think. Stop depending on the media and the national media outlets to curve and mold your thinking, to tell you what's good, what's bad, what should, what shouldn't be. Understand that these media outlets are owned by these very banks and corporations. You understand? Please understand that. So they sit at the table. They have directors, okay? They take acting classes, all right? They take speech classes. Okay, they have that little sign where you see in the movies, go cut, all right? So they're actors and actresses, okay, that are trained to manipulate the public at large, all right? That's their job, is to transfer and transpose your thinking into what they want you to believe. By now, we should know that. By now, we should have had enough of politics to know that politics is a script, okay? It's acting, okay? If you listen to some of the political speeches, you will know they refer to certain congresspeople as actors, Get a load of that right there in your face, actors. So a lot of you are dealing with debt collectors that are actors because they're posing as creditors. They're demanding money from you. They're making you get a second job to pay them. You're losing your family because of it. There's stress on you and your wife. Okay, the men is having to resort to do things that they didn't want to do because they're trying to maintain their home. And you have some people sitting in offices with suits who have certain legal knowledge that is using that legal knowledge in a way that it wasn't intended to be used. They're pulling out all the tricks. They're using words that you don't look up. You don't understand. They're using terminologies that you thought you knew, although you were the executor of the contract. They know you're not paying attention because you're not reading the contract. And when they talk, it collides with the salient points and contents of your mortgage and security agreement, but you haven't read it. You're going to be a victim of wrongful foreclosure. And if you're on the show today, or if you have access to the show and you're the victim of that, I got to say you probably earned it. All right? Don't mean to be blunt, but I don't know any other way to be. All right, let's see what other news is going on. A black hole in Ocwen offices. As y'all know, Ocwen Loan Servicing, when you call into my show, you call a servicer, a lender, and a lender a servicer, you will be immediately corrected because this is one of the most profound deceptions that we believe. We don't know who is who. And you call in the show and you say my lender, or you say claim, or you say complaint, and you're using these words in opposite to each other, you're going to be corrected. You need to know what you're talking about. There's no reason you shouldn't know because you have a copy of the contract. Read it front to back. You'll be surprised. Okay? This is where we're losing our real property because we're just not reading. All right? This is where we get into these credit contracts. We're just not reading. Okay? If you start reading and asking some questions and stop answering questions and stop being quick to defend, okay, and just ask a couple of questions, when you are asked a question, you'll come out a lot better. And you'll find out that the people that went to school for 10 years to learn how to, supposedly, they were supposed to be learning how to protect and uphold the law. But as long as we have man and woman and human, and you have another human being purportedly over another human being, you're going to have abuse of power. You're going to have abuse of position. You're going to have abuse of office. You're going to have abuse of knowledge and of your education. You're going to start just like some doctors. They go to school and be doctors with everyone else. And then somehow that gets boring and they now want to be God until you know that's not the way it should be. It should be like this and you should do it like that. And we have all this convolution to where we now have 10 pills for one sickness that we were able to cure just from one tree in the woods. All right. Maybe I'm ranting a little bit. Let's go on to the news. Ocwen is a loan servicer. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, for those of you who don't know that, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is like the FBI to the people, but to the debt collectors. So they're the ones that keep an eye on them. And like any other government agency, they can be relative or not relative. But the whole purpose of those agencies, in my opinion, is to enrich themselves by going after bad behavior within the debt collection society. Now, this is the way I think of it. The way you benefit from them doing so is by you reading the suits that they bring against these banks and servicers and lenders, because you're able to learn information that they already conducted the research on. So you don't have to do a lot of studying. You can just read what they say the servicers are doing, read what they say throughout these settlements, of which you get no money. Okay, we see these multi-billion-dollar settlements, and you get no money, but you're the one that was injured. And somehow, some way, and you can listen to this show 5 days a week, and I think you can find I think my co-hosts do a better job than I do explaining to you who is responsible or who feels that we are property of them. All right? Basically, you're property of somebody if somebody injures you and someone else gets the money. All right? Period. That's like me throwing a rock, breaking your window, but then the neighbors say, well, pay me for breaking your window. All right? Pay me. Because somehow I own that neighbor. They don't own themselves. So y'all figure it out for yourself. I don't get deep into those issues, but I want you to understand that if somebody else is getting, the state is getting $50 billion from a national banking association for damages that they impose upon the people of that state, then I don't know. That sounds like a form of slavery to me. That sounds like somehow you don't get the money, the money. They spend it on anything other than you. They don't even give you a cake, you know, some cookies, you know what I mean, or something for your trouble. You still, they get $50 billion, and you still have to go into an unfamiliar territory, which is the court system, and fight with the thieves that paid them $50 billion to shut the hell up. What is that about? Do you own yourself? Do you belong to yourself? Does your property belong to you? I think if you don't educate yourself and do what you need to do, you will find out that somebody else will gladly take it. And understand, our states live off the people. The people stop shopping. The people stop talking. The people stop borrowing. These corporations couldn't make money off themselves, off each other. That would be a short fight. They make money off of you, your existence, your signature, your credibility, everything, all the power is in the people. The people created the government. Government didn't create the people. The people keeps the bank in business. The bank doesn't keep the people in business. You understand? That's the mindset. All right. I'm infringing on my other co-host topic because that's topics that they explain and educate on very well, but I have to incorporate some of those theories and ideologies for us to understand and empower ourselves to understand that the power is in you, not in a fiction, not in an artificial entity. You understand? The power is in you. These people are people. They wear uniforms. They hold title of nobility. They're educated in certain field of choice, but they're people. And if they harm you, you got a right to go after them for damages. If they claim you owe somebody and you don't, you got a right to sue them for damages. Okay? Speaking about that, let's look at this article here. Seems like the Bar Association, and understand this, I may talk a lot about the legal society. I have very good people in the legal society. I have very good friends that are attorneys. Okay, I have paralegals, friends that are good paralegals, and there is no doubt in this society going on right now a war. It is a religious war. It is a war for your mind. It is a war to manipulate you, and it is a war to keep you subjugated. Understand that. But there is also within that war some people that is fighting to maintain sanity, order, and fairness, and that exists also in the legal society, okay? There are very good attorneys out there. There's not a lot, and because there isn't a lot, then the culture of corruption that may go on is more profound than the fairness and justice of that particular environment, okay? Nonetheless, you have two attorneys, you have there may be two attorneys that don't give a damn because they get paid win or lose, right? Let's just speak about the facts, all right? But you might have an attorney in there that knows that the bank's attorney is doing, saying some things that are not moral and ethical. And for some of the veterans and some of the legal society that really went to get an education to promote fairness and justice in our legal system, they're out there. They're offended. They're embarrassed. I talk to them. It's not even fair anymore. Like the rules don't even apply. These bankers have totally collapsed not only your county recording system, they did that systemically by using MERS. So now you can't rely on your county recording system, which is historical like your counties. You can't even rely on documents that are filed there. That's a crime scene, all right? But now you can't go to court and expect fairness because the judges are not abiding by the rules anymore, okay? They are basing their decisions on arguments. And I want you to always look for that. When you're reading these orders and these judges say, well, based on the arguments of the plaintiffs, well, what do you mean argument? I don't argue with anybody. I state facts. And you're supposed to adjudicate on facts and evidence, not arguments. You will not be able to out-argue an attorney. And I don't know if anybody wins an argument because both parties leave with their perceptions. There is no win. You're not going to change my mind in an argument. You will change my mind with some facts and some evidence, but you won't change my mind in an argument. So when you see a jurist say based on the argument, you know he's BSing you. He wants to go a certain way, and he's using the excuse of an argument to rule against you because you've beat him up maybe on the facts, all right? So when you see that, you need to correct that and be like, I'm not arguing with you. And I can't argue with a trained verbal assassin. Don't do that. This is why I teach you that you don't have to use big words. You don't have to go in the law library and stay there for 10 years. All you have to do is be a presenter and proffer of the facts and the evidence. And the evidence that you have before you regarding that debt collector doesn't exist. Many times they don't have evidence. Many times they don't have facts. And if you've listened to this show three times at least, you should know that. Okay? But at any rate, there is a, in New York, the Bar Association is starting to dig their heels into the waneful and deceptive behavior of their society. Because, of course, when, as anything else, when you have a bad cop, it affects the reputation of the department. When you have a bad worker in Walmart, it affects the reputation of that Walmart store. That can cost you revenue. That can cost you future gains. Okay? In most cases, in some cases, it could put you out of business. Because, again, our society relies upon the people and their energy and their money and their hard labor to survive. Without that, they have nothing. All right? So the legal society is starting to purge and clean up not only the court system, all right, because as I told you, your president, if he doesn't do anything else, okay, I give him credit for going after the big boys, going after the people that think they're untouchable. I think he's launched more investigations. I think he's captured, so to speak, more politicians. He's removed more politicians, more people that are in power that are abusing the people, I think, than any other president. All right? And I give him credit for that. The things that you see in these multi-billion dollar settlements, these public officials, this NSA situation, I know the people have an issue with that. But that NSA situation with the spying and all of that, I don't think it affects us as a people more than affect the people that they're really listening to. And that's your presidents, your politicians, your bankers, okay? Your judicial systems. You understand? I think it worries them more. In fact, I know it does, because they're the ones that have a lot to lose. They're the ones that are in the position possibly abusing their power, abusing the people. Because once you beat the people to a pulp, they can't live off of each other. You understand? These banks and corporations cannot live off each other. Okay, that's like two crackheads trying to live in a box. It's not going to happen. I mean, we're both the same. I know you're a crackhead. I know you lying. You ain't a crackhead. And you lying. I mean, that's not going to work. So when we have some cattle out there that we can go and fool everybody, put on a nice suit and brush our teeth and hide our addiction, then, you know, that's a good distraction. We just come together at the end of the day and be like, you know how many people I fooled today? You know how many houses I stole? You know how many times I lied on the witness stand? Let me tell you the new thing I'm doing, man. I'm doing the robo-testifiers. You know, I have people coming in. I craftily, you know, kind of draft their words to where they can always slide out, all right? And that's what the legal society does. I've broke down to you what they write and how it makes no sense and how you don't even have to argue with it. You don't even have to do an answer to any complaint. You can do a strong motion to dismiss and motion for a hearing and sit up there and ask about four or five questions and watch them squirm. Okay? Request that they be put on the witness stand. Do a request for a deposition. You want to get them running? Set it for deposition. Did y'all hear what I said? Set it for hearing and deposition if you want to get that debt collector out of your life. Say, I want to depose some people. I want to depose the person that executed this assignment. I want to depose this person. And it seems like this particular law firm, foreclosure law firm, has put some pleadings together that is not true. And I want to depose them to see if they have any firsthand knowledge of what they wrote. Because at the end of their pleadings, it didn't say Susie Jane from Bank of America. It said the attorney's name. And I want to know how the attorney can plead any facts when he has no facts. So I'm thinking, although the caption of the lawsuit says Bank of So-and-So, I'm thinking it might be the attorney that put this story together, and it's not supported by any facts. So I want to talk to him. Set a hearing, Judge. I want to ask that attorney some questions. I want to know where he got that information from, because I've looked through all my documents, and I can't find nowhere where that is stated within the documents and the contract that they rely upon. Where did you get that information, sir? Or ma'am, did you lie? Do you know you can be held liable for your pleadings? That's a violation of the consumer protection laws. If you state in there as a fact that I obtain money from somebody that you don't have any idea I obtained that money from, do you know you can be held liable for a deceptive or making a statement that was not true? Y'all know that. Y'all been on my show long enough. But anyway, let me read this article to you. This is a case in New York. David A. Cohen and his Long Island firm was trying to collect debts from people who weren't already paying their bills, or the debts were not owed to them. Okay? There was voluminous complaints about the firm spanning a 16-year period. That suggests that in cases where the homeowner believes that the attorney representing the pretender lender has violated ethical rules, or where the attorney for the homeowner believes that to be the case, you should file a grievance. Okay? And what happens is this court, in the matter of Cohen and Slamowitz, Slamowitz, all right, which is I believe, a New York law firm. The Bar Association came back, did an investigation, and they conducted an investigation because they feel that when they allow these attorneys, certain attorneys in these firms, to start bludgeoning the public with false affidavits, robo-signed affidavits, stealing people's real property, displacing people out of their homes, kids out of their neighborhoods, children out of their school districts, you name it. It's all done by the legal society. And they take an oath, okay, to, first of all, their association, but also to the Constitution. okay, to uphold the Constitution and to let the court know when they have information or even a belief that client or their plaintiff may be doing something deceptive. They're held to a higher standard than you and I. Okay? So when they come in there and they're lying or let's say they get the pleading and you're defending your foreclosure case and you point out that that's a robo-sign doc, that's a surrogate signer, they couldn't have executed that. The notary was in this state and the person who executed was in another state. That note is forged. That person did not lend me money. That assignment did not get into the trust. These are all facts that attorney and firm should look at, and they have a moral and ethical obligation and duty to say, hey, Mr. Plaintiff, Mr. Client, my license is on the line. Okay? Now, I can fight for you, but the homeowner, and I'm looking at the same documentation you gave me, okay? Now, at that point, when they accept the case, yeah, they have plausible deniability. Like, I don't know, I'm just doing what my client said. My client said this. But when you actually get into the litigation and that homeowner or that defending party starts pointing out some fabrications, some outright perjurious activities, then, yeah, as an attorney, you have to be like, wait a minute. You know, I can't continue going in there proffering this lie when I can see myself with my own eyes and my own legal ability and education. I can see that it's something ain't right. I'm going to say it nicely. Something's not right. And they have an obligation to, as you see in many instances, you'll see on court TV and in the movies, you know, they'll call a sidebar with the judge. Judge, can I do a conference right quick? Judge will be like, okay, approach the bench. And you'll see both sides go up to the bench and they have a little powwow. Well, he's supposed to have that powwow. I'll be like, Judge, you know, I'm a homeowner. Okay? I'm licensed by the Supreme Court of that state, okay, to do what I do. I took an oath. There are moral and ethical rules to any association. There has to be rules or it would be chaos. Okay? I'm looking at this document and I first of all, I'm an honorable person, and I would be absolutely just totally upset, okay, if I was to kick someone out their home based on this documentation. So I'm going to look at the plaintiff's counsel, and I'm going to say, counsel, you should be as well. We're about to displace someone and their kids out of their home of 20 years, 25 years, 10 years. Doesn't matter. I'm looking at this paperwork, and I know you and I went to the same school. We obtained the same education. We have common sense. We're supposed to have morals. We took an oath. You understand? And I'm looking at this paperwork, and counsel, I'm just telling you, I can't tell you what to do. We're a brotherhood, though. What I'm telling you is that you need to go back to your client and probably dismiss that case, because for you to move forward and promote this would be a violation of several rules of ethics, of morality, and just you being a one of the people. Do you understand? You being one of the people, you should have a problem with doing that, okay, and not utilizing your knowledge and your skill in this forum, that which is the court that belongs to the people, okay? Not their court. It's the people's court. We shouldn't be using this forum or be so comfortable in this forum to be committing fraud, and we got a judge sitting right there, and he knows it's fraud. And neither one of us say anything. Okay? So what we're dealing with. So at any rate, this is what the Bar Association said. They said that Cohen and Slamowitz engage in a pattern of practice of conduct prejudicial to the administration of justice under the Code of Professional Responsibility, which is a New York code that I'm familiar with, 1200.385. The judges said that an attorney, listen closely, does not necessarily have to have personal knowledge of the specifics of his firm's misconduct to be held responsible. I'm going to read that again. The judges said that an attorney does not necessarily have to have personal knowledge, meaning he don't have to see every case that they're doing. He doesn't have to read every pleading that they're filing. He doesn't have to interview every plaintiff that they're dealing with. Okay? All right? He doesn't have to have personal knowledge. So he doesn't have plausible deniability. Like, well, I didn't look at their case. That's their case. I don't know what they're doing with that case. I didn't read it. No, he doesn't have to have personal knowledge for his firm's misconduct to be held responsible. Okay? You know, I heard of misprison of felony. Even if the individual responded lacked personal knowledge of the particular client matters, I just said that, the pattern and practice of misconduct established at the hearing, which were pervasive within Cohen and Slamovich since 1996. All right? So understand, they might be slow, okay? You might be delayed, but you won't be denied. They've dug into this firm since 1996, saying that this reputation of yours, Cohen and Slamovich, has been known since 1996. So you might have not knew about it in 94, 92, or 88. You might have known about it in 96, but from 96 to now, you got a reputation of being a, let's say, fraud closer firm. All right? And everybody on this call can name a law firm or foreclosure firm or debt collector firm that is known for working with the likes of a Ocwen or a Bank of America or a Wells Fargo or any of these other banks that were responsible for the economic collapse in this country. So if you know these firms that work with them and get in bed with them and steal people's homes, sue people so they can't feed their family, then I would say you're complicit. But let's move on. It says, since 1996, were sufficient to impute such knowledge to him as a senior partner of CNS, which is Cohen and Slamovich. Okay? So they're saying that this attorney, the senior partner, was responsible for the acts of the others. Okay? It's a legal terminology for that. And the panel held in its curiam ruling, the judges added that not only was Cohen personally advised in 2002 to exercise caution, which some judges will do, will tell those attorneys, you BSing right now, you borderlining, you understand? They were cautioned in 2002 to exercise caution, supervise your staff adequately, and put in place appropriate and reasonable procedures that could be monitored. But he and his firm also received numerous letters of caution and admonition. All right? So they were warned in 2002. I know you got a big firm. I know you don't watch everything, but your reputation is on the line. You got some of your attorneys coming in court that's playing a dangerous game. Okay? They were admonished. So the court said that Cohen and Slamovich has about 300 employees, a pretty big firm, including attorneys, paralegals, and other staff. And amongst the problems noted by the court was an attempt in 2005 to collect from a debtor identified as Ghulam Mutaba of Flushing. The court said that Cohen and Slamovich mistakenly pursued collection from Dr. Ghulam Mujaba of Corona. All right? These are two different people is what they're telling you. And the names are spelled different. You can't see it, but I'm reading it. And you can read this at livinglieswordpress.com. All right? So, in other words, the firm was collecting against a person that had the same last name but was from a different area, but they had a different first name. And I can see it. I'm reading it. So, in other words, the man probably did what I teach on this show, is to say, listen, you need to validate your debt. I'm not that person. Like, I don't owe you a debt. And they just continue to collect from the man, although one of the men were in Corona and the other one was in Flushing. All right. So the court said, given the various settlement and OCC consent degrees, listen to this, that have been entered against virtually all of the major banks and servicers, it is hard to imagine a scenario in which the lawyers have not been put on notice of the existence of major defects in the claims of their clients. Did you hear what they said? Y'all know every attorney out there, every firm, every homeowner knows that there is a billion of these consent orders and settlements where they know that they've been robo-signing, they've been lying, they haven't been telling the truth, they've been doing everything but what's right, and the court is saying that can't nobody out there in this legal environment or in the national banking industry say that they don't know or have overwhelming knowledge that there's a lot of sauciness going on in this foreclosure crisis. Everybody knows that. Every time you turn on TV, a bank is settling, okay? They've manipulated everything. I think they manipulate the damn air, okay? I don't know if anything they're manipulating. I heard one of the banks was manipulating the water market, trying to make water go up, all right? I mean, it's just ridiculous, okay? But we allowed it to get there. And then the court system allowed it to get there because we have judges who were corporate attorneys. What do you mean, Brother Sharif? We have judges that were attorneys, and they worked for the corporation, saved them a lot of billions of dollars, probably helped them steal a lot of houses, probably helped them maintain or obtain money they wasn't supposed to get. And now they climb up the ladder in the legal society, and now they get to put on the robe and continue to help some of the corporations. Not all of them, some of them. I'll let you make the decision based on your court experiences whether they do most of the time or some of the time. Okay? I know my experiences, and I won't say that they're all bad. There are some very honorable judges out there, period. Okay? But there are some that, you know, been on the corporate side or, okay, I was reading an article the other day. One of the judges from the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy case, I seen an article that, and Lehman Brothers was one of the biggest bankruptcy cases in this country, okay? Over 33,000 documents, motions, and all that filed in the Lehman Brothers case. It was huge. And the reason why I noticed this particular article was I dealt with a case in that bankruptcy by this particular judge, Judge Peck. So when I seen his name, it jumped out at me. And I said, wow, that's that judge that, you know, I had some favor with. You understand? I was successful at demonstrating what I needed to demonstrate, and I got the relief that I set out to get. So I remembered his name because, of course, I always remember names of jurists or anybody that does the right thing, at least by me. But this particular judge had left the bench, okay, once that case was over, and he's now working for a huge law firm. Was it a law firm? Or a law firm or something that who's doing some business with Lehman Brothers or somebody of that. So it was a clear connection. It was some hookup there is what they were insinuating. All right? So, you know, it's all wheeling and dealing, all washing hands, all right? All at your expense. And when it comes down to a settlement, you get pennies. Legal society gets everything. The banks and them go to lunch, send them on a few vacation. They charter some jets, all on the backs of the people. Not all the time, a lot of the times. At any rate, let me finish up this article and go to the line. Anyway, the ethical, what the courts were saying, unlike civil litigation, lawyers are held to a higher standard of behavior in connection with their practice of law. The ethical and disciplinary rules make it clear that the lawyer should avoid even the appearance of impropriety. Just the appearance. Just you saying that's not my signature on that document, that lawyer is supposed to say, hey, let me talk to you. Let me take a sidebar. Let's go in the hallway. Mr. Swartz, are you? Is that not your signature? Man, somebody forged that signature. Here's my signature. Here's my driver's license. Look at that. Does that look like that? Oh, yeah, let me talk to my client because I don't even want the appearance okay, of unethical and immoral behavior. That's the way that society is supposed to work, because they're responsible for the people's best interests. Okay? But the court went on to say, here in this case, the court opened up the possibility for imputing knowledge to the attorney, even though there are attempts to create compliance departments and other organizational tools that are meant to isolate the actual licensed attorneys from illegal conduct perpetrated by their firm. That's deep. Okay? If a bank came to me for representation in the foreclosure properties based upon loans that are subject to claims of securitization, I would make absolutely certain that there were procedures in effect within the bank would make sure that we were naming the right plaintiff, naming the right defendant, and that a default was definitely present. So I'll end that there. You can read that article at livinglies.wordpress.com. That is Neil Garfield. He is a attorney. He puts out some decent information. He is an attorney, but he puts out some decent information. And, of course, you know, he doesn't want the appearance that that society is other than just. So he has a frustration with the appearance that is going on. Those of you that are on this call have a problem with the appearance of the legal society, which is why you're on this call, because some of you have went to the legal society for help. Some of you have been victims of the legal society. My co-host has been a victim of corrupt legal society. Not that he's done everything right, not that we've done everything right, but what I'm saying is a lot of you have stories of impropriety and unfairness and the appearance, if not the corruption, of legal societies, public officials, people that are held to higher standards. And that's why you're here, because you decided to take things into your own hand, or you're afraid to go to that society because you know they're just going to separate you from your money and not provide the adequate service that you need. Or some of you are here to make sure when you impart with your money that you're able to keep an eye on what they're supposed to do. You can take it either way. The legal society has relevance in this country when they do what they're supposed to do. If they don't, and they're left unchecked, they can be a detriment to the society. And this is the angle that I see going on. And this is the angle that caused me to do the show, caused me to help and do everything I do just to educate people and have them informed. So again, your presence here shows that you're trying to do what you need to do to help yourself. All right. I'm going to read you another thing from a case out of New York, One West Bank, those of you that have it, versus Yvonne G. Dewar, D-E-W-E-R. You should be able to Google that. Supreme Court, State of New York, Queens County. That is not the state Supreme Court, but that is just a local court. They call it the Supreme Court. That is a civil and criminal court, but it's not the Supreme Court. But and it was an IndyMac. As you know, IndyMac turned to One West by way of purchase and assumption agreement for certain assets that belonged to IndyMac. None of those were loans. At best, they were servicing rights, all right, because the loans were already sold into the secondary market. So the court did the right thing. Of course, they had a MERS assignment, and this is what the court said. To the extent plaintiff contends that it is the assignee of the mortgage and note, we don't talk about that. MERS don't ever have any damn notes. They say that on their website if you read it. The court says that to the extent the plaintiff contends that it is the assignee of the mortgage and note by virtue of an assignment executed by MERS, plaintiff has failed to show MERS had been the holder of the note and mortgage, or that MERS had been given a interest in the underlying note by the lender or specifically authorized to assign the subject note. See Bank of New York versus Silverberg. That's a case you all should read as well. In addition, although Mr. Boyle, who was one of the robo-testifiers, did an affidavit, you know, that the homeowner owed something, and he knew that they owed it, carefully drafted affidavit, of course, to where he can slide out if he was under some sort of cross-examination by one of the students on this call, all right? you know, he left a little hole in there. There's always holes in these complaints. You understand that? I've always pointed it out to you guys. There are always holes in the complaint, all right? Always windows in every complaint with these debt collectors. But anyway, it says, Mr. Boyles make reference to the possession of the note by the plaintiff. His affidavit does not give any factual, didn't say argument, you understand? The court rules on the facts, not the arguments. Does not give any factual details of a physical delivery of the note and when the note was endorsed in blank. In New York, you're going to have most of your foreclosure cases, you're going to deal with them saying that the note was endorsed in blank, okay, which is a bunch of hard rock wash. And if you knew, read Article 3 of the UCC, you would understand how that is attained and how it is properly done, and it is never properly done. Okay, so the court went on to say that basically the affidavit you did of the debt collector and the fact that Mercer signed the note in the mortgage is a crock of shit, excuse my language, all right, because I still get worked up when I see this kind of nonsense. Like, I'm not understanding when they grow up and stop saying the same old nonsense, but they're not going to stop until all of you on this call and out in the public start suing these people for lying in court and attempting to steal your property. Or obtain a judgment in a debt collector suit, okay? Or squeeze you for some money, or try to make you go to mediation with somebody you don't even know who they are. You understand? You got to start taking action against these people when you have the knowledge and the ability to do so. Don't do so until you do. Or you can go ahead and find someone within the legal society that doesn't mind doing so. And there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of great people out there, a lot of great judges, a lot of great attorneys that hate what they see, that hates going up against a fellow bar member and looking at them lie through their teeth. They hate it. They go home, they may drink, complain to their wife, may have to go to church a couple of more days a week just to be able to stomach it. I can imagine how they feel. Okay, I can imagine having to stand before maybe a judge that's crooked and be like, just don't worry about it. You're getting paid either way. Go along with it. You understand? I'm just creating scenarios. I'm not saying that this is happening, but I'm not saying it's not. All right. At any rate, just wanted you to read that snippet for those of you that have those MERS assignments. Please understand who MERS is and who they are not. MERS is no longer in business. MERS died, I think, 2000 and something, I don't know. They changed their name a couple of times. It's now MERS Corp, all right? But these assignments were done by the millions, so they're still out there. They can't take them out, all right? So when you have that evidence of fraud in that county recorder, they can't remove it, okay? But there is an action you can take to have the county recorder remove a fabricated document, and you should look into your state code to see what that is. Okay, because if you can prove to that county recorder, that clerk, that document right there has been used in 20,000 other cases, 10 courts and judges have ruled that that document by that company is defective, is fraudulent, and I need you to remove it out of my real property records. Yes, you can do that. If the clerk knows, look in the clerk rules. If the clerk knows that there's a document in there that purports to be something that it is not, it is their duty and obligation to remove that document. No different than if you dispute something on your credit and you can show that, listen, this debt collector was sued for putting those kind of documents out there. And here's the same document, here's the same account on my credit report. Here's the case. You want to take that off from me? They're going to take it off. So it's no different than you going to the clerk and saying, that assignment that's in there, that robo-signer right there, she was deposed. Here's the deposition. She admits that she don't know a damn thing about what she signed, and she signed 10 million of them. One of those was mine. I need you to get that. I don't need to sue and go through fighting attorneys. I need you, Mr. Clerk or Mrs. Clerk, get it out my record. And they're supposed to do so. So if you get the assignment removed, what do they rely upon? They don't have anything to rely upon. What can you do at that time? Bring your action against the original party who is dead, out of business, insolvent, okay? Can they answer? No. The Simon is gone. It doesn't exist in the record. You do a judicial notice of the record. Here's a judicial notice of the county record. My lender went out of business, didn't tell me. The only surviving party of the plane crash is me. I get to keep the luggage. I get to keep the house. Nobody can come and say they own the house. He died. He left nothing, no will. You understand? Hopefully y'all follow me. Weird sense of personality sometimes, but from the emails and the calls that I get, people follow me pretty well. I'm blessed with the compliments that I'm able to break it down in layman's terms, and I'll continue to do so. All right, that's all I have for news. Let's go to the caller line, see if we can help some people. I'm going to take a short break, try to replenish some fluids in my mouth, and we're going to get right in and get to the callers. Stand by.
Listen, everything happens for a reason. Seeds born, elders die, all things in season. These days, I'm just trying to get in where I'm squeezing. Scratch that, I bust the game open till it's bleeding. That's that, D-Don Kimasi, Mau Mau Posse, guerrilla warfare, no man will ever stop me. Cause I run with tall, black-skinned Anunnaki, with 4 pounds of silver-plated chrome in their pockets. But most days, I am non-violent, just don't cut my wiz and I remain silent. And when I speak, my truth weighs a ton. The scales tip as bricks of gold fall off my tongue. Your bars become stiff and cold as you succumb to the spit I hold between my molars for fun. Yeah, yeah, in all fairness, I get it from my daddy. In milk here, baby, raised up on the avid. Offspring of ghetto life, crumbling brick and tragedy. They say that we have it good, I say that they imagining. I came from Wardick, but soldiers stayed in war state. Anger see through jagged teeth cause they couldn't get a warm plate. I made it out with a number two in the clean slate. Dirty conscience haunts me when I shouldn't even be awake. Cause I was born in the 80s just like my friends was. But now I'm getting texts about this for my overdose. And not that he was my closest friend, but I hold him close. He lived across the street in apartment B where they sold the dope. And yes, I'm going on a tangent. My mind is running rampant and writing is the only way I handle it. The booth is like my cell therapy. Ask goody. My words like food for the soul. Let go of the past with them. And past cathartic, this is life saving for me. 14 years old, slicing arms when life gave up on me. But I had taken rest in De La Soul and brand new to say that hip-hop show me God is nothing short of purest truth. Show I do this to prove a point to my critics. Lyrics like fire bullets, they seeking targets to finish my limits to bend flaws. Now I made it my business to personally master these rappers and pack shit with a ribbon. Presented to children who don't know how to tell the difference between...
Peace, peace. All right, Brother Sharif, we're back. We're going to go to the caller line. Caller number is 424-222-5250, 424-222-5250. You can press 1, be placed in queue. We're going to try to get into the questions. We got the board lit up. About a half a dozen questions here. We're going to start at the top. We're going to see if we can get the information to the people. All right, let's go to top of the board. Somebody just fell off. Let's go to 661-0240, 661-0240. You're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question? 0240. All right. Let's go to 843-543-5190. I believe that's Charleston, South Carolina. You have a question?
Yes, sir, I do. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, please.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was calling in reference to the same attorneys that you're talking about and judges that you're talking about. I have an issue here in the courts in Charleston, South Carolina. I was going through a foreclosure, not a foreclosure, trying to go through a foreclosure, and went into the court, filed my motion to dismiss, let the judge know within my motion that debt. There were a debt collector. The attorney's firm that was trying to come after me was a debt collector. So we went through the rigmarole and everything and got to the point to where the attorney tried to file a motion for summary judgment. But in his process of filing a motion for summary judgment, he put inside the header, the caption, all the wrong information. It was sent to the clerk of court. The clerk of court kicked it out. So it was supposed to be filed 10 days before the hearing. The clerk of court kicked it out on the 10th day, on the very last day that it was supposed to be filed. And the judge still allowed him to come into the courtroom with a motion for summary judgment and awarded summary judgment to this guy. So I filed a motion to void and vacate the judgment. The judge got upset because within the motion to void and vacate, I pointed out all the issues, the wrong issues, that there were a debt collector, that actually the bank at that point was no longer in existence. I also told the judge in the motion to void and vacate that if he continued to violate my rights guaranteed under the Constitution, that I will do a Title 42 against him. So I went and got a copy of his oath of office from the Secretary of State, and I attached that to my motion. The judge got upset, and I feel that he got upset because when I requested a hearing, they told me that my hearing will be held on the same day that they're selling the home, an hour before they're supposed to sell the home. So at that point there, I knew who I was dealing with and what I was dealing with. So what I did is the day before the hearing, I went and filed a temporary bankruptcy and brought the paper into the court. They didn't know that I did the bankruptcy, so the judge held the hearing anyway and denied my motion. I already knew he was going to deny the motion. So I presented them with the bankruptcy paper because at that point, that hearing couldn't have been held. They knew that the hearing couldn't have been held, but they went ahead with it anyway because I was under the protection of the bankruptcy. When I handed the paper to the debt collector attorney, he looked at me and his words was that, oh, he filed bankruptcy on me. So I looked at him and I said, oh, I thought it was Wells Fargo that had me in court. I didn't know it was you. So my reason for the call is that the bankruptcy got dismissed. I did a voluntary dismissal of the bankruptcy because I did not go through with the full schedule of anything because I just needed to see exactly and have more proof of who I was actually dealing with. So now they're trying to restore. They did a motion to restore the case back to the dockets, and I received the information from the clerk 2 days ago that a judgment was entered. So what I'm calling to find out is that what I'm planning on doing is that entering a motion to compel outstanding discovery or do a petition and become the plaintiff in the case to bring them back to the table to continue the discovery. Because even in everything I asked for in discovery, they did not present anything to me. Everything that I sent to them, they sent right back to me. The judge knew of this. But
okay, brother. Okay, brother. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you know, I know there's a lot of build up frustration and energy, and I try to keep the questions short because you have about 15 different issues. There's no way I can address those issues because I can't answer your question in the same length of time you ask the question. All right.
Yeah.
So, okay. But listen, I let people flow as much as I can because I know, you know, especially if it's your first or second time dealing with the system, that we have the perception due to the news and the national media outlets, we think that these people are honorable. We think our politicians are honorable, but then we learn that they'll back up traffic, you know, for 3 days on a bridge, you know, or, you know, they'll be smoking weed, you know, doing coke, or, you know, they have bribes and payoffs, and we act like we're so surprised. We're only surprised because the national media promotes that junk and we absorb it. That's why they call it programming. All right, but let me get to your issue. I know you're frustrated. First of all, yes, you're gonna have those. What I don't like that you did is if you're gonna go into the court system, you need to. If you're gonna put together some electronic that you buy from the store, sometime we as men and women, we'll just feel like we can do it without reading it. We see the screws. We see all that. We're like, yeah, I got that. I don't need to read that. Because for some reason, we're opposed to reading, you know, and reading the rules before we engage with anything. We don't read our contracts. We sign these mortgage agreements. I know that if anybody gets a mortgage from this point on, you're going to read it. We get into these, we have intercourse with these debt collectors, we execute credit card agreements, leases, you name it, and we don't read. And at the end, when there's some problem, we realize that we waive many of our rights. We didn't read. We didn't read the instructions before we engaged. So you went into the court system, and you didn't prepare. You thought you was going to go to the court system, and that man with the costume on, with the robe on, was going to have your back. You know, he thought, you thought he was your woman. Like, I got your back. Like, I'm here to make sure things are fair. That is how it's supposed to be, but it's not always like that. And even if it's not like that, it's his job to be impartial. He can't help you. He can't help them. He's just he needs to make sure the rules are followed. It's a fight, you know? There's a left and a right. There's a red and it's a blue. And if I was watching you and a man said, look, Brother Sharif, I just want to have a fair fight, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to hold his arm. I'm not going to pull his hair. I'm just going to be like, okay, y'all fight. Let's make sure it's fair. No hitting behind the head. You know, I'm a boxing fan. No hitting behind the head, no low blows. Just keep it fair. When y'all leave, go to your corner, and whoever wins, wins. So that's really how it's supposed to be in the court, meaning that you have to train, okay? You have to have a nutritionist. Yeah. You have to study the local rules. You have to study the rules that apply. You have to study your contract, which is the first law. The first law is the contract. That is the law. What you and I agree to is the law. As long as it doesn't violate any state law or federal law, you and I could agree to anything. You can agree to be a slave. My co-host all tells you that. Yusuf tells you that all the time. You can agree to slavery. Slavery is okay. They just don't call it slavery. They call it contract. All right? And they know, okay, and they put this pretty little deceptive language in this contract that you don't know what the hell it means, and you sign it away. You just like, yeah, I just want that motorcycle. I just want that car. I just want that house. And they got, just like in their complaints, they have so many windows, so many holes, that you get into it and you finally read it, and they be like, you can't say that because you signed that away. Or you see that section where it says waiver of rights. You can't argue that now because you agreed that you can't argue it with us. So let me tell you about your situation. You didn't read the rules. Sounds like they did a motion for summary judgment. Sound like it didn't comply with either the rules of procedure locally or it didn't comply with the format. And I'm just telling you one of the options. And the clerk was like, I can't put that on there. And I understand the clerk has to do her job. And her job is to keep the judge in check, to be honest with you, to make sure the rules are followed. I've seen clerks that be like, no, I'm not doing that. I can't do that. I just witnessed it a couple of days ago where a clerk was arguing with a judge. I was in court now, and the clerk was like, that's not the law. You can't do that. I was laughing because the judge was like, who you want? No, the judge is not the most powerful person in that courtroom, okay? They're not. Okay. There are other people that look make sure that they stay in their place. There are sheriff deputies in there. There are other people that are in there to ensure that he is complying with the rules because that's their job. Now, do they work together, and would they correct each other if there's some defects? Yeah. So the motion for summary judgment was not adequate, but it didn't sound like – I think you took it that if the clerk removed that summary judgment because it didn't comply with one of the local rules, that didn't mean that the content of the motion was not proper. Maybe he didn't follow some procedure, or maybe the time had told for him to do that. Whatever it was, if the clerk is saying it wasn't proper to be pinned to the docket, that didn't mean that he couldn't do it. So I'm think you're thinking that he went there and even the clerk said it was wrong, but I would have to understand why the clerk said it was wrong. So you went before the judge and the judge was like, look, we've been litigating this. He could have said, I'm just thinking now. He could have said, we've been litigating this for a year. I know what the clerk is saying, but that's some, you know, that's a grammatical defect or error. You know, I'm going to go ahead and take the motion for what it is. Like, I'll give you an example, all right? There was a pro se litigant that was in the case, and they called me for consultation and talk, and they said that the court kind of denied their motion for default because they left off the word behind the word judgment. They didn't put judgment on default. So the court playing games said, well, it's not proper because it doesn't say judgment. There was a grammatical error. okay? And I told them what to do to correct that, saying as long as the content for a pro se litigant, as long as the content is proper and the court can ascertain what the motion really is, you will often hear the judges say, although the document was labeled this, the court is taking it as that because after we read it, that's what it really is, a motion for this or that. The court is not stupid. We label documents wrong. It's the content of the document that counts. So don't worry about being perfect when you're in court. Just state the facts. They know you're pro se, but when they try to hold you to the rules, they're supposed to be more lenient with you than anybody else. Not to say that you can violate the rules because you're supposed to read them. But they're supposed to give you some leniency. So the judge went on and he entered summary judgment because he thought it wasn't enough of a defect to render the motion void. All right, let me just go on that. Now, the problem that I have with you is that you said, which you did correctly, strategically, you did the right thing. You felt that there was going to be a subsequent order for either judgment or foreclosure. So you went and filed a bankruptcy. Let me tell you where you are wrong. One, I don't think you noticed the court that there was a bankruptcy because after you filed, you're supposed to, first of all, after you do your master list of creditors, they were supposed to get notice if they were a creditor, either if they were in your credit report or you listed them. Let me finish, brother. Either they were listed in your credit report or you listed them on your schedules or whatever have or your petition. Somehow you gave an indication that they may be a creditor. Let me tell you one. You don't list people on your schedules when you're filing bankruptcy if they're not a creditor. The court will tell you. If you wrote them down as a creditor, don't file something and say, hey, they're not a creditor. Because the judge is going to be like, well, why did you put them on your schedules as a damn creditor then if they're not? You don't list debt collectors on there. You list them as unsecured. You can list them as undisputed, you know, things like that. But really, if you're looking at the assignment and it's void, okay, I don't know why you're giving them any credence, and you know in your mind they're not creditors, okay? So if they come in and you don't list them and you don't give them any relevance and they come in and say they're a creditor, you'd be like, I didn't list you anyway. Like, wouldn't you a creditor? Prove you're a creditor. And they have to file a B-10. But let me go into this. You never file a bankruptcy just to stop a foreclosure. I'm telling you right now, I'm telling everybody on this call, you don't abuse the bankruptcy system by filing these bankruptcies. What they call shadow bankruptcies, all this other nonsense, that's abusing the system. You understand? That's using the system to stop if it's a true creditor, from obtaining their debt. And understand on this show, I don't promote you getting rid of all debts. I think some debts you're damn liable for. You got the benefit of the transaction. You got the car. You got the house. You put wheels on the car. You got TVs in it, but you don't want to pay the person who gave you the money. That's not what I do here. I say the contracts that you don't owe anybody, illegitimate debt that you can't ascertain that belongs to the person that's suing you, yes, get them out of your life. But don't think you can get rid of all debts on some technicality or some nonsense. So you didn't notice them that there was a bankruptcy because I'm telling you right now, had you – did a notice of bankruptcy, as soon as you filed, you should have did a notice of bankruptcy to that court to let them know you filed bankruptcy. You don't file a bankruptcy if you don't plan on going through because they have task force out there for that, all right? And that trustee, okay, will jump up and down your stuff. I've seen it happen when people go in there and every time a foreclosure sale, they go put $50 on the $350 court fee and then they just, you know, dismiss it because they stopped the foreclosure sale. That's like going into a restaurant and you having a $3 bill and you leaving a dollar on the table, but you use the benefit and you drink the coffee and you don't pay for the rest and eat the meal, but you don't pay for it. That's fraud. That's a crime. Do you understand? Yeah. And people do that all the time. And I hear people talking about, oh, I just did a little bankruptcy, just stopped sale. They got a right to come and see you about that. Like, first of all, if you're going to use us, at least pay our fee. Do you understand? Okay, pay out $350 because we know you got a $100,000 mortgage and you ain't paid your payments in 2 years, but you're going to come throw $50. You're going to put us on a layaway, but we stopping all the collectors from coming after you, or we stopping your car from being taken and you going to work making $500 a day, but you don't want to pay us our $350. Don't do that. Second of all, If you're going to file a bankruptcy, learn the bankruptcy procedures and go through with your bankruptcy, meaning that you file your bankruptcy, get a bankruptcy preparer or an attorney, do it properly, and if you have a mortgage issue, you bring that issue in an adversary proceeding. Okay? And that's the proper way you do it. You should have stayed there in the bankruptcy court because, one, what? You have the protection of an automatic stay. All right? So you know they can't move against you. You've already experienced in the court that it appears, and I just read that article with you, it appears there is some deceptive behavior going on, maybe with the attorney, maybe the judge, who knows? So if you know in that forum you're not getting the favor and the relief that you need, you can try another forum where they're already stopped. They can't move forward on you because by operation of the injunction, by operation of the automatic stay. So now you got them stayed, okay, they're restrained. They can't move forward against you until the bankruptcy is completely adjudicated and results in a discharge, and you address the issue of your foreclosure, whether there is a lien, and there's a procedure for that. So all you did was you filed a bankruptcy, you stopped them from moving forward for a minute, okay? The judge wouldn't have the hearing because you didn't notice them and let them know that it was a bankruptcy, because I'm telling you right now, if you file a bankruptcy, these judges are not going to move forward if they know about it. That's stupid. That's criminal. They will not move forward. I don't care if they're two words from saying foreclosure granted. You can say, hold up, bankruptcy, and they're not going to finish those remaining two words. So you didn't let them know. They had a hearing. You stopped it for a minute, okay? And I'm listening to you, brother. I don't think you paid them the $350. I think you left a portion of the bill on the table.
Good deal.
All right.
I paid the whole fee.
I just don't want – listen, it's a society, and what I'm telling you is this. Let me tell you how – a society thinks. So you was in that court, and you went and you challenged the judge by getting this oath of office. Now, I listen, if you come to me and you pull out something and you don't use it, I'm going to use it against you. In other words, why you pull out his oath of office just to show it to him? He signed it. He know he got an oath of office. So what are you doing? You threatening me? Are you trying to say what? You're trying to say because you don't like my decision, or maybe you're not as educated in the rules of procedure that you're accusing me of doing something that I'm not doing. I'm looking at the motion and I'm saying I'm going to allow the motion, which he has discretion. Every person, you, a judge, a public official, a police officer, whoever, they have discretion, meaning they can employ some common sense and see that although this looks like that, I'm not going to make that decision because there are other circumstances revolving my decision. Or there are other facts I'm taking into account to make that go forward. So you didn't like the way he was doing, in other words, and you was accusing him of doing something wrong when maybe you didn't understand what his rules are. So you pull out his over. Let me finish, brother.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I really don't need you to say anything else on that. I'm just telling you what you did. I'll let you talk. So you're threatening him, and you go and get a copy of his oath of office, and you're going to attach it to some motion. Well, what does that mean? You understand what I'm saying? What does that mean? What are you saying? Well, I got your oath of office here, and I'm telling you that if you don't go my way, then what? Then you're going to file a Title 42 case. Okay, well, listen, why are you warning him? If you knew that he did something wrong, file your Title 42 case. You don't have to provide a memorandum of his employment with the state by saying, here's your oath of office. Yeah, he's like, and yeah, that is my oath of office. And what? Are you saying I did something wrong? Then speak to me like a man and say, judge, can you explain to me why you allowed the summary judgment when the clerk had an issue with it? I just want to know, politely, respectfully, I just want to know why you're allowing that. And he would explain it to you. These people are not rude. They're not disrespectful. They may be a little bit slick. They may be a little bit sly, but they're trained word assassins. He could have worded an answer to you that maybe would have not been an answer, but he would have gave you some direction before you flew off and said, let me show you this oath of office and show you what I'm going to do to you if you don't not do what I don't want you to do. So let me get into the last phase of what you said, okay? Now you filed the bankruptcy and you didn't go through with it, meaning that you just had a temporary reprieve, and now you got to go back to that same judge and let him complete what he already set forth to do. Now, I know in between that time, you still didn't go and research why he allowed the motion for summary judgment to be in there. You already done threatened this judge. by showing him an oath of office, and now you got to go back and stand in front of him? I don't understand why you just didn't, like, I don't want to be in this forum anymore, although I don't understand it. I'm going to stay in the bankruptcy court, and I'm going to adjudicate my claims in there, because that's the proper forum for debt collectors and creditors, things of that nature. You understand what I'm saying? So all I'm telling you, brother, if I could give you any information, is, you know, we can't extrapolate information that purports to threaten somebody or threaten somebody with their livelihood or their license or their position. We have to learn their position and learn their rules, so we're able to go in there and demonstrate that I know the rules you're supposed to follow. And honorable judge, I realize that you shouldn't have allowed, at least it appears that you shouldn't have allowed that summary judgment motion to proceed. And I'm not understanding why you're doing so, but I want you to explain that to me so I can know what action to take if you do, be it an appeal, okay, be it an interlocutory appeal, or be it a motion for reconsideration, or, be, you know, I need to know why you did that so I can know what course of action to take. So let's say you are dealing with a crooked judge. Then you just politely be like, okay, judge, it appears as though you're not abiding by the rules. I'm reading the local rules, and it says that, you know, you should have done this or do that. But just, you know, I just want to know what your position is on it so I can file a timely appeal. Now, you know what I said to him without throwing an oath of office at him? I'm watching you, and I'm reading the rules. I know what the rules say, and you're doing something that's inapposite to the rules. That may be a violation of my constitutionally protected rights. It may not. Constitution don't even matter. You're in a contract court. Don't even bring that up unless you're going to file a Title 42 case. I don't care about the Constitution. He don't give a damn either. But, yeah, he knows that if he violates certain protected constitutional rights, then, yeah, he might have to deal with that. But really not. You know what I'm saying? Rarely does he do so. Because who you going to go to and do it? You going to go to another attorney? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. There's very few of those that will take that action against him. You have to learn it yourself. But if you learn it yourself, right, you would have found a better way to deal with him while he was in front of you, instead of depending on going to an attorney. So, look, I want to file a Title 42 case against a judge. That's my brother-in-law. Or, you know, he helped me. Or where's society? You know, you have to have very egregious cases to bring these type of actions, unless you're going to do it yourself. And then you're at, you know, a disadvantage there. But all you had to do was appeal it, brother, or do a motion for consideration, explain to the judge why he shouldn't have entered that ruling or he shouldn't have entered that order, and go up to his bosses, which is the appellate court, and say, appellate court, you know, I'm not going to argue with the judge, I'm not going to get into it, but I want you to take a look at this because I believe this was an error. All right?
Okay. So let me ask you this. Let me say this. All of the rules in the transcript that I have, I've stated all the rules. He even told them that because they did not bring the note into the court, he will hold them at bay. But he continued to move forward, even though I objected. I pointed out all the rules, and he even granted me some of the rules that he even to hold them at bay. But he still continued forward. Now, the motion to void and vacate, in the motion to void and vacate, I explained to him everything, all the flaws that was done, even with the summary judgment, because the rules in South Carolina says.
Brother, let me share something with you, because I'm gonna go ahead and go to the other callers because I got a load of that board. Let me just share this short story with you, and hopefully it'll help you, man, and prick your conscience. I was in court about a month ago, and I had a gentleman. He kind of sounds like you, like, you know, he knew a little something, but he didn't know how to execute and demonstrate his knowledge of the law. And he was in an eviction court, a summary judgment court, okay, after a foreclosure. And I was standing behind the brother in court there with someone else. And I was standing behind the brother, and he was sitting in front of me. And he had a big old folder, man. And he had some of the callers that I get on my show or some of the emails that I get on my show. He had a big old folder, and he had the UCC1s and the 3s and the private and the public. I mean, he just had a folder. And I mean, the dude was big bald-headed brother, melanated, heavily melanated guy. And he was just flipping through, and I could see him, man. He was ready to just spit fire. And I'm looking at his paperwork, and I wanted to tap the brother on the shoulder, but I knew he was next. I didn't have an opportunity to catch him. And I wanted to tap him on the shoulder and be like, brother, you in the wrong court. You're saying the wrong thing. You're UCC1, and you're in a summary judgment court. You're in a summary eviction court. This court is just going to be like, are you a tenant or are you not? The foreclosure is done. You with the UCC one, and I brought it from the private into the public into the private, and I got my, you know, he was doing all those things, and it wasn't a proper forum. So listen to me. He went up before the judge, and she remembered him from the last time because I seen him there the last time. And he was popping that stuff, and she was just like, uh-huh. Like, you're in the wrong court. She told him five different times. I heard it because I listened. But the brother went up there, and this was his last hearing. And he was up there, and she let him flow. And he was like, I did my UCC 1. Here's my UCC. I looked up liens into my UCC 11 and this and this and that. And judge, they not creditors. And, you know, they can't discharge. And my signature created the note. And he was going into all this Patriot stuff. And she let him rock for probably a good 13 minutes, and she was sitting up there the whole time, and the judge is like, mm-hmm, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, she was like, yeah, I understand. She was like, yeah, oh, really? Let me see that. You understand? And she was just like, oh, okay, yeah, like, you're right. And they couldn't do this, and they couldn't do that, and they shouldn't have foreclosed, and now they done foreclosed already. And he's like, you know what? I'm looking at what you're – I can see where you're coming from. She did that for about 13 to 15 minutes, and then he sat down. She said, are you done? And he's like, yeah. She pumped him up real high. She's like, you know, I see what you're saying, and you know, I absolutely agree with you. And so he was all smiling. He thought he's won, and she says, but – I'm going to enter an order for eviction because this is not the proper court. And before she did that, she hit the button, and four more sheriff's deputies came in the courtroom and stood up there where she was because she knew that he was about to get ignorant, okay, because she had pumped him up and told him before, your arguments are not properly before this court. Those are things that you do prior to foreclosure. I can only hear whether a foreclosure was done, the property transferred to somebody else, and whether you're a tenant and holdover. And she's like, you haven't defended that. So she's like, I got to evict you. The man was about to explode. It was a smart thing that she had additional help and bailiffs come in that court because she had pumped him up and let him go because she cut him off. He was going to get irate, so she let him go. And when she said that, they had to remove him from the courtroom. The brother was about to cry. And I wish I had an opportunity to talk to him and say, you're not doing the right thing in the proper court. Brother, hopefully that story helps you. All right? Okay. I think you need to study a little bit more. I think you already have a judgment, so it's going to be difficult, okay, because you have the res judicata issue that a judgment is already, you have to do these bankruptcies before judgment is entered. So you already have a judgment, so you can't go relitigate that case when a court has already decided against you, okay? That's, you can consider that double jeopardy. You don't have any standing to do that. So you kind of waited too long. I wish you had stayed in the bankruptcy court. I asked this question a couple of weeks ago, and maybe I could have helped you or directed you to the proper remedy that you will need. But hopefully, man, do some studying. Still try to work something out, you know, and that's all I can say at this point, brother. I appreciate your call, all right? All right, let's go to 856-7524. 856-7524, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Hello?
Peace.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you clear, brother. You have a question?
Oh, how you doing, Brother Sharif?
I'm
first time caller.
All right.
Listen, my situation is this. I've listened to your show. I have an ex-girlfriend. She's in foreclosure. But I'm the type of person, I don't like to move forward until I really understand what I'm doing. And I got a slight grasp, but there's a lot more I need to learn. My question for you is there like a group? I live in the New Jersey area, so is there like a group that have phone-ins that we can, you know, we all can put our ideas together and talk, and maybe I can help her through this?
What state are you in?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. I can put you in touch with my New York group. A couple of my students was on the call last week. Brother Nino and the New York Power Group. And I'm sorry, and I can put you in touch with them. New Jersey and New York laws are almost synonymous. They're about close. They're adjoining states. You know, you can call in on their calls and see what they're doing. But you share almost the same kind of laws, New Jersey and New York, that you would be able to benefit from that group. I don't have a particular group in New Jersey at this time, but I'm sure they're forming you know, and they will let us know. But if you email me at staff@consumer-law.com, all right, staff, yeah. S-T-A-F-F.
I have you.
All right, email me. I'll put you in touch with Brother Maynard's group, and then you can go, and I appreciate you and honor you for standing up and not diving into something that you're not familiar with and you wanting to get all the ammunition and tooling that you need to at least have a good chance at being successful.
Well, right now what I'm looking for is I'm looking for an opportunity to maybe push this down the line a little bit so that my studies can get a little deeper. You know,
okay, so you
just
said your girlfriend is going through a foreclosure?
Well, it's actually an ex-girlfriend. Yes, she's going through a foreclosure.
Okay. Well, you're in a judicial state, so they have to go through the court system, you know, so you have that. But, you know, once you get served with that, then you have, you know, 30 days to answer and educate yourself on, you know, what your defense is going to be. So, you know, going through the court system in New York and New Jersey, it can take up to 3 years to complete the foreclosure, even if you didn't answer them. You follow what I mean? So, you know, you need to jump on it right now and educate yourself on the foreclosure process anywhere but in New Jersey and the rules, and be prepared to file your motion to dismiss when they come after you. You need to do an audit of your county recorder, all the documents and communication that she's received, or you just need to get with a group, and that's a good, you know, question to get with a group. And our Brother Maynard knows a lot. I mean, he's a former mortgage guy. And, you know, he's been on this side of the consumer protection laws for a long time. So, you know, you'll learn something out there, group. And they're a very progressive group. When I tell you, like, they really were progressive even prior to meeting me. And I just added a lot more of my strategies and information to them that's really blew them up. And they're doing things. They're doing great things up there with that group. So email me. I will put you in touch with them. They know how to get in touch with me. If y'all need any added support, or if there's an issue that arises that I can help employ some strategy or some a different course, then they will help you. All right?
Yeah, that'd be fine, brother. I just want to say to you, I really appreciate what you're doing. It's a service that is really needed. And really, if there's any way that I can help you, I would give you my services in any way that you need. If you just needed me to go to the store to get you a cold water, I would do that, because I really believe in what you're doing.
Brother, that's honorable, and let me say, although I talk to a lot of people, those type of compliments and sentiments always touch where it's supposed to, and I appreciate you doing it. I wish all of us would employ the attitude and spirit that you have and just try to help each other. You understand what I mean? And even if it is a glass of water, you know, help each other. I was in a court the other day, and the sister was really upset about, you know, a debt collection action, and I kind of whispered in her ear. I said, this is what you want to say, and this is what you want to do. She was very nervous, and she went and did what I had to do, and she found me after. She said, thank you for what you said, because I needed that additional time. I just told her to do a continuation so she can get some more information. It was something simple, and I put my arm on her shoulder, and she was just like, thank you. And that did a world of good for her. I mean, she thought I was the best thing since sliced bread. Just little things that we take advantage of. I appreciate your offer, my brother. And listen, I know that this station, this network, if I ever was chased up into a tree, y'all would get me down. So, you know, point well taken, man. Be blessed. I hope that question, and email me, and I'll provide you with that information. All right?
Yeah, peace and blessings, brother.
Peace and blessings.
Keep up the good.
All right. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, let's go to 516-5545, 516-5545, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, Brother Sharif, it's Brother Maynard speaking.
Brother Maynard, man, you on time. Why didn't I recognize your number? I have to log you in here. Did you hear the brother that was on the call? He needs you.
Yes,
so I'm gonna email
yes.
You his information.
Have him reach out to me, absolutely.
I sure
it
will.
Would be
thank
a privilege
you for being
to
here.
Help him out.
For everybody
absolutely.
Who don't know, Brother Maynard is one of my high students, okay, one of the graduates, and he's doing a great job in New York. Those of you that don't know, I think you can reach him at, let me see, I should know your email address by heart, nycpowergroup@gmail.com, NYC, New York City, powergroup@gmail.com. Is that correct, Maynard?
That's correct, sir.
Oh, man, all right, good. So If you're in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area, call Brother Maynard. I'm sure he does calls. He has a big group. They taking care. They killing debt collectors up there. I'm telling you. And they that's the top of the class up there. I have other groups in other states. They're doing a great job as well. But as you guys know, being from New York and being a New Yorker, if you can move and shake in New York, you can move and shake anywhere. No disrespect to the other 50, 49 states, but, you know, New York is the capital. That's why Wall Street is there, all right? So movers and the shakers. So when you learn how to shake and do the Harlem Shake in New York, you're going to be good everywhere. So, Brother Maynard, did you have something else to add?
I had a question for you.
Sure.
In a situation where there's a statute of limitation, for instance, in a particular case, the statute of limitation is in June.
Uh-huh.
And they have the court has issued a judgment for foreclosure recently. What is the procedure in bringing to light the statute?
Well, this is the thing. The statute of limitations becomes funny, and there's also strategies you can employ when dealing with that, and that's what we have to consider. First of all, there's two ways you can look at it, and many people don't know that. And I talked to attorneys, and last week I talked to three of them and told them the same thing. They were just like, oh, wow, Brother Sharif, I didn't even think about that. So let's say you have you're a resident, your property is situated in New York. Okay, you got a New York property, New York agreement, okay, but the lender is from Texas, all right? Let's say the statute of limitations is 4 years in New York and 3 years in Texas. You get a notice of default from the company, the alleged lender, or the debt collector who's headquartered in Texas. All right? So, again, it's 4 years statute of limitation in New York. It's actually six. I'm just using an example. And say it's a 3 year statute of limitations in Texas. So let's say the lender sends you off a notice of default, okay, and a notice of foreclosure. All right? And let's say the statute of limitations had not come about in New York, but it had expired in Texas. You can then, and I've done it, make the case that the statute of limitations applies in the state that issued, in the entity that issued the default. You understand what I'm saying? Because in your documents, it will always say the lender, okay, is formed under the state and laws of maybe Texas, okay? So that means that lender, in some cases we had to sue them, sometimes you have to go in that state. Okay, that means you have to go where they're situated. So if the lender's in Texas and they issue a default and the statute of limitations is 3 years in their state but 6 years in New York, you can say, well, you'll be on the statute of limitations because you issued the default from Texas. And your statute of limitations where your home state is, you applying your state consumer protection laws, I can say that the statute of limitations is gone because you're a Texas corporation. Do you understand? So you need to look at that and see which one benefits you best, the statute of limitations in your state or the statute of limitations where they are situated. Let's go to the other aspect of it. Let's say the statute of limitations is up in June and they don't complete the foreclosure, okay, or they've given the foreclosure recently and you do an appeal. The foreclosure is not complete. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you let it sit there for 3, 4, 5 months, and it goes beyond the statute of limitations. The foreclosure is not complete. Statute of limitations has told. I've seen cases that happen just that way. It's up on appeal, and the attorneys just turn around and be like, oh, we're just going to do a motion to dismiss. Sorry, you know, time is up. You understand? The clock doesn't stop ticking. You have to conduct that debt collector has to conduct that collection action within the time frame of the statute of limitations. Because let's say it goes up to appeal and the judge kicks it back and be like, nah, we're not going to do a foreclosure. That was erroneous. You follow what I'm saying? So it's not done. So they have to get it done within the statute of limitations. You understand? If not, you can just – if you can keep something in the air, keep something going that's not final, you understand what I'm saying? Then you just move to dismiss saying, I'm sorry, we don't have to continue to go further. The statute of limitations is told. You understand what I'm saying? So go ahead and do your appeal. Keep it going. They're going to know the appeal is coming, and they're going to know they're going to have a statute of limitation issue, and they'll probably try to work out something with you if you want to.
So you would do a motion to dismiss, let's say you come to that point.
You're saying they already did the foreclosure, and the statute of limitations is up in June. You need to appeal it.
They have the judgment. They have the foreclosure judgment.
Appeal it.
So, but in this particular case, the judge is the hearing or the foreclosure date is June, when the statute of limitations goes into effect. So,
should appeal it, may not, because you're appealing the judgment. Period. So you still need to appeal. If you appeal it, then it's not going in June. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're appealing that decision. So you're appealing the judge. I appeal. Of course, you have the right to appeal and to the appellate process. So you're appealing that for whatever reason. If you have appealable grounds, you need to appeal it. So now it's not going to happen in June. So now you're going to be in the appellate court for what, a year or two? So the statute of limitations is going to expire within your appellate procedure.
Gotcha.
There's an issue now. Mm-hmm. Not to complete the action within the statute of limitations. There's an issue now. Statute of limitations has told. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So we're moved to dismiss because now you can't move because statute of limitations gone. Now, you're going to move to dismiss same for statute of limitations, but the court's going to be like, statute of limitations. So, you know, because they're still collecting that debt. It hasn't been an adjudication of the final determination whether they're good or not good. Just because they start a foreclosure action, that doesn't mean it's just. You have to allow for time to go through the system properly, or that's where you start seeing them calling you and want to work something out because they're close, and they know if they file the action now, it's possible that the statute of limitations may end, you know, somewhere throughout that process. That's my belief. Okay?
Excellent.
But appeal it, and if, you know, do it on time. Now, most times you only got 30 days or less to appeal it, but appeal it if you have grounds for the appeal. All right? That's why one of the tactics you have to employ is sometimes when you're getting into certain courts and you feel like it's not going your way or there's some element or appearance of unjust, then you need to move that action or you need to stop there if you feel like you're not getting anywhere and go into a different form like a bankruptcy court. You understand what I mean? Bankruptcy court is going to be a little bit more to the point. A little bit, you know, look, it's creditors and debtors, man. Which one are you? We ain't got time to play games in here. You have a lot of tools in the bankruptcy court that you can employ against somebody that's really acting like a creditor and they're not. Bankruptcy court is a little bit more serious, all right? So they don't play in there. You have affidavits in bankruptcy court. You have a Rule 2004 subpoena in bankruptcy court that you can employ and bring these robo-signers into court, which is similar to what you would have in a state or district court in terms of a deposition. So there's a lot of things you can employ, and they're not going to play in there. If they got to file a B-10 proof of claim under penalty of perjury and be like, yeah, this man owes us $100,000, I'm telling you, they're going to run a little bit quicker. But if you play around in these state and district courts, man, they can lie all day long in their pleadings because they're not under oath. You know what I mean? They're not under mm-hmm. oath. They're going to say whatever it is they have to say to get a judgment. So, you know, we need to learn both courts, and we need to always have mm-hmm. alternatives and always have other venues we can go in that is a little bit less tolerant of the bull crap. Because you're only in bankruptcy code a limited amount of time. You're going to get a discharge by operation of the bankruptcy code within a certain amount of time. Those flags are set. You know, it's just set to send you this letter at this time and send you that letter at that time. So they're going to move a little bit quicker in bankruptcy court. That's why you go in there and it's more of an expedited process. If you have good counsel, if you have a good bankruptcy preparer and you have some information yourself, you can utilize that bankruptcy court and do a lot of things, homestead exemption. And I got the person coming on to talk about that, homestead exemption. You can discharge a lot of the interest and fees on student loans. You can't necessarily get rid of student loans, but you can get rid of a lot of that interest and fees. You can get a lot of get rid of secondary liens, second liens on your mortgages. Those go away. Some of the interest and fees on even your primary loans. You just have so many many tools, which is why that's another area that we need to really educate ourselves on and be employing that arena. You know, in state court or district court, you know, you got to do Rule 45 subpoena and all that. It's a process. You're fighting. You know, in the bankruptcy court, you have that Rule 2004 subpoena that you can issue against any creditor and bring them on in court. You understand what I'm saying? Cut the nonsense. Like, I need that robo-signer in court tomorrow or next week. I need the person who – I need that notary. You getting subpoenaed to come in here in this court. And they don't play in bankruptcy court. You understand what I'm saying? They don't play. They just they want to move and move decisively. All right, brother?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much. Keep up the good work, man. Thank you. All right, let's go to 803-803-0387, 803-0387. I think 803 is South Carolina. South Carolina is in the house today. You have a question? 803-0387. All right. All right, let's go to 787-0590, 787-0590. Turn your radio down, your internet down, your computer down. You have a question?
Peace.
Hello? Yes.
Hey, ¿cómo está, familia?
¿Cómo está? Bien, bien.
All right. How do I find out because, you know, a lot of this index number is registered in one particular spot. How I can find where the judges register the index number? Because, you know, they make bonds and all this stuff. When they create these bonds and where they register at and how I can find myself.
Where the bonds and where they registered at? That's what you're asking?
Yeah, the register place. Yeah, where they registered the bonds.
I've heard of a risk management department. Maybe the clerk can direct you to these bonds. But what are you trying to accomplish by finding out where the bonds of the judges? Again, I'll say to everybody, you don't need to be messing with a judge if you don't know what you're doing. You don't need to be looking up anything. Just hear me out. If you don't, what are you trying to accomplish? Like, we have to be mindful or have people that knows more about those procedures do those procedures if it becomes necessary. Like, I don't know what this thing is with bonds and, you know, finding out where they're at and who department. I don't, if somebody has some procedure that you can somehow get some public official's bond and benefit from it, you know, tell them to call into the show, you know, 424-222-5250. But I don't know where those bonds are held. I don't deal with that. That's something maybe you should ask Yusef. And you're a repeated listener, so you would know I don't cover that aspect of it. So Yusef would be a better person to ask that question. Okay.
Yeah, because there could be that I have we're going to try to open these adjustments, right? We open up a judge and we show that the judge have interest on the case.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. I'll say this. There's a lot of attorneys that own these debt collector firms. You can find out if you just go to Secretary of State and look up the officers that are part and parcel of this company. If you do a little bit of research, my students do. I teach them how to do that. Find out you finding out where the judge have an interest in the company. You know, there is information. There's a portfolio that every public official must report on their investments. Those reports are available, but they know who accesses those files. Like in Florida, you know, in Florida there was a case where there was a chief judge that was had to go to Washington to appear before the Senate panel on the fact that some of the attorneys were doing their research and realizing that some of the judges that were ruling on these foreclosure cases had investments in mortgage-backed securities, not just as a retirement plan or as a state. And in the state, you can look in a CAFA report. But there were some judges that they looked at their portfolio because they have to report those investments. That's law. Okay, that's federal law. They have to report all of their investments that they have in all these corporations, and when they come upon a case that there's a conflict, they have to recuse themselves. So if they got investment in Wells Fargo, they shouldn't be hearing a Wells Fargo foreclosure cases. Well, some of the judges wasn't recusing themselves, although the attorneys were demanding that they do. So they made a complaint to the chief judge in Florida, and he was summoned to Washington to talk about this because it's a big issue. It is a big issue, and you bring up an interesting point. So he was summoned to Washington, and he was grilled by the Senate panel and says, what is this that we have judges hearing cases where they clearly have a conflict of interest in an investment in the plaintiff on the case they're adjudicating? And the judge said, the chief judge says, well, I don't know of any specific cases where that happened, and I don't know which congressman it was, but he says, oh, you don't? Well, I have three cases right here to where I pulled the judge's portfolio, and I'm showing you right now what the attorneys have requested for this judge to recuse himself three times, and the judge failed to do so, and they filed a complaint with your department. I mean, he just called him flat out. And the chief judge says, well, I need to look into that. So what happened afterwards was now those reports were available on the judges, so you can get them. Just go down there and ask for a copy. Now what he did was, as a smack in the face to Congress, he requires whoever gets those investment portfolios of the judges show their driver's license so they know who's getting these files. Just utter nonsense. But you should. That's a good way that you can find out if you feel that a judge may have a conflict of interest. You should look at his investment portfolios. You need to call the clerk and just ask, what can I find the investment portfolio for the judges so I can make sure there's no conflict of interest? And they should give you that information. It is public information. They are public oath issues, and they answer to the people. So, brother, hopefully that helped. I got to go to the next call. I appreciate that question. It was
thank
a good
you,
one. Right? Thank you, man. Love you.
Out there. And I'm still waiting for your phone call, right?
All right, man. I'm going to get to you.
I've been in New York.
I was in New York
the first week of March.
Okay, brother. Take care. Love you. All right. Let's go to 618-1858. 618-1858. You know how frequency radio. Do you have a question?
How you doing, Brother Sharif?
I'm doing well, brother. Peace.
All right. I did have a question, but you answered. You can just mute. It's cool.
Come on, man. Think of another one.
Think of another one? Okay.
Yep.
I can't think of another one. I'll tell you one thing. When you're dealing with a foreclosure and they get ready, the sheriff's ready to pick, to come put them out, dealing with the sheriff affidavit, how does that work? Is the sheriff affidavit, is it good or is it bad?
What state are you in?
Georgia.
Oh, yeah. What part? What county?
That would be Fulton County, Sandy Springs.
Yeah, I mean, Fulton has been, to my knowledge, has been coming around to doing the sheriff's affidavit if you do it right. I think I had it out there. I didn't realize I had a Dropbox and all the stuff was in it, so people was getting it. I was like, well, how are you getting it? He was like, well, it's through your Dropbox. I was like, see, that's what I get. Open up all these programs, and I don't know how to man them. But, yeah, it does. I mean, you just got to present it right at the right time, and it's supposed to happen. You go to that sheriff, make sure you serve it upon the sheriff. I mean, like, here's the counter affidavit. I need you to take that back to the court, and they're supposed to set a hearing for trial when there's an issue of title. So it does. And you know, really, whether it works or not, it's supposed to. So you just have to do everything you need to do to employ it, and then if they don't act right, then you know what to take. You go to that sheriff or that deputy and be like, listen, I mean, this is law. It's on the books. You can't ignore that. Stop acting like you have an interest in me being evicted when I'm telling you I'm following protocol and procedure pursuant to law. So I need you to do what you're supposed to do. You shouldn't care whether I'm in or out my house. That's not the job of the sheriff. The job of the sheriff in any county, which is the highest law enforcement agency in the state, is to make sure that the Constitution is respected and everybody stays in check. You understand what I mean? It's not for you to decide whether I should be out or in. But, yes, you should definitely use it, my brother. And, you know, you can't do a bankruptcy once you have an eviction. That doesn't help. That's not going to help. You definitely need to do the counter affidavit and read all the information that goes along with that, and then they're supposed to set it for hearing. So it is working out in Henry County, Cobb County, Fulton County. Yeah, it's making its movement. It's been something that was on the books that wasn't gaining enough strength, but it is now. So definitely use it, my brother.
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right. Peace. Thank you, man. All right. Let's go to 757. I believe that's Virginia. 757-2824. You're on High Frequency Radio. You have a question.
Peace, Brother Sharif. I'm glad I made
peace,
it through.
Peace, bro.
All right. Well, I got a quick question. This situation, I have a mortgage. It's been for
you
about
do?
2 years. Yeah, I have a mortgage. A little under 2 years I've been here in the home. And I have self-employed. I've been self-employed for 5 years. Okay. And now I've never missed a payment. Pay all my bills on time. And all of that. But make a long story short, I just lost a major contract that I had, and for lack of better words, I'm unemployed, don't have any income. So yesterday, you know, I'm up on my mortgage. Yesterday, I called them to let them know, see if I could get some kind of deferral or some of that nature, deferment on my payments. You know that I had a hardship.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I was reading that last night, looking through some documentation. I remember that word because I looked it up. But, so they weren't willing to help me. So this situation, next month I might not be able to make my mortgage payment. I never missed, like I said, I never been in this situation before. So what I need to know, I mean, I'm doing my own studying, but what direction should I be going in?
Well, they're not going to help you unless you're in default. And the reason why is threefold why they won't help you. One is with default, they're able to obtain the proceeds from insurances because they have insurance against your default. And you have to be in default at least 3 to 4 months and those insurances kick in, meaning that the insurance company will pay, sometimes pay off the entire loan or pay off the payments that you miss. Also, after your 3 to 4 months in default, they can start foreclosure procedures. So let me tell you how they think. More than likely, you know, you told me you had a mortgage, and that's why I said really. I'm being sarcastic because many of us don't realize we don't have a mortgage, but I know what you mean. So let's say they look and they got some banged up paperwork like we all see, and they know they got some banged up paperwork. As long as you're paying them, you know, they good with you. Well, let's say that you can't pay now. Are they going to help you while you're current? Heck no. They're going to wait till you go on default, and they're going to be like, okay, we got that insurance money. Now we can start foreclosure. Now they'll offer you a modification, and they'll tell you, and they're being sued for this type stuff. Well, just don't pay your payments for 3 or 4 months, and then we'll give you a mod. And people actually fall for that. Like, I don't know. I'm not knocking anybody. But if I'm having a problem this month paying my mortgage, why would I listen to some idiot tell me, okay, well, listen, we can't help you out, just, you know, roll a payment over. Why don't you just go into default 3 or 4 months, and then we offer you a mod? Like that, whoever falls for that, just probably being programmed by the national media outlet. But at any rate, what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, we can't help you until you're in default. So you'll have to be in default 3 or 4 months. They'll start foreclosure proceedings. If they know they have some bad paperwork and they can get you to execute some new paperwork with a fresh signature and a notary, they're going to do that because they are locked in now. They don't have to deal down the line with you bringing up the old paperwork or you looking to the county recorder and see that you have some assignments or you really looking up that lender that you said you had and realizing that they're out of business and you shouldn't have been paying them. So they're going to throw that mod at you. They're going to throw that mod at you like Derek Jeter on the baseball field. You understand? They're going to throw that mod at you quick because the mod locks them in with you believing that they're a creditor. You're requesting, begging, asking, desiring for services from them. So you believe that they who they say they are. And then they have something, they have a fresh contract once you, you know, go forward with that belief, and they're going to go ahead and give you a contract to say, well, listen, you got a right to, again, you got a right to agree to slavery. You got a right to believe that I'm Jesus Christ if you want to. It's not my job to tell you I'm not. It's your job to determine that I'm not. So, you know, in your case, brother, I would say, do you think it's going to be a long-term default?
I mean, hopefully I can pay, but I would just say I called them yesterday just to take precautions because, like I say, I've been out of work, since late last year, but it's getting real right now, so that's why I called them. But, I was trying to understand because when I got the mortgage, it was through a mortgage company, and I made one payment to them the very next month. Boom, now
Wells
Fargo. Now I'm sending my payments to where I made one payment to who I
of
made
course.
The agreement with. You know,
right.
So I need to look into this. So I was going to go down to the county tomorrow and try to get all of my documentation. I don't really know exactly how to get it, but I'm to that now.
All right. Well, I'm glad you said that because, that's usually how it happens when these mortgages are sold into the secondary market and we don't understand the transition. Like, we'll do the loan in August, and then come in September, you might do the loan with, let's say, ABC Bank in August. And then September,
right.
You're going to get a letter saying that ABC Bank is now your servicer. Well, you're looking at the letter, and you're just like, well, that's just ABC Mortgage sending me a letter. But you don't understand a transaction occurred, a transition occurred to
that's
where
exactly
they're now
happened.
Saying we're not your lender, we're your servicer. So that means we went from the owner of the house to the maintenance man. We went from the owner to the what they call in New York, the super. You understand what I'm saying? So you're the superintendent now. All I'm doing is cleaning up, maintaining the house. I sold it to another owner, and I just maintain employment with that owner because I was familiar with the building. You understand? So what you need to do is go look in your records and see what's in there. And
down to
get
the
you
county,
some
right?
sort of down to the county and look into who owns your mortgage, ask some questions, and see what's going on. And then
can
make
I get
determination. Yeah, you can get copies. They probably charge you $1.250 a copy. But, just get a copy of all the records pertaining to your property, any assignments, any transfers, this and that. And then you need to obtain – you can do it the long way and try to – you need an audit. You need some sort of an issue audit, okay, just to determine whether your loan was sold into the secondary market, or you need to ask questions of them to determine, I want to know how many transitions or how many times a mortgage was sold, transferred, how did you become the owner, and you need to look into that. Once you look into that, then you make a determination whether there's something fishy in your documentation trail, in your title trail.
The paperwork that I have, I was looking at over the, I think it was under the insurance, and I don't know what it was, but they were changing. It was like 20 or 30 changes on this property from what I was looking at, from the records I have.
Yeah, but no, you're looking too far back. You just want to look from the time you executed your mortgage. You don't want to go back into, you can find 100 because your property has been here for a long time. The county recorder is historical. They had ownership documents from when there was just a horse and a bucky. You understand what I mean? When they was writing it online paper. So you're going to find it. You just want to start from when you executed your mortgage agreement, everything that was filed in against your property since then. All right? And from there, you should know because your contract clearly would say if there's any changes, like if you file for bankruptcy or something like that, you're supposed to let your lender know. You know, your contract promotes communication. Like if anything happens to us, we'll let you know. Anything happens to you, let us know. Sometimes when you lease an apartment, they say, listen, you got to add anybody to the lease, let us know. You know, open communication is a requirement. It's a condition preceding. Let me know if you change hands so I know, that when Mark comes over, I'm not about to take a bat to his head because he's the new owner. You know what I mean? So open communication is a requirement. And if they don't do that, that is a breach of the agreement, and that is a damage, something that you can sue. But I think if you go and look in your property records, man, come back next week, tell me what you got. We'll go over what you have, and I'll tell you what kind of call you need to have to them. And that call may be, look, I realize since I'm out of work now, and I got time to focus on this situation, and I'm listening to the debt show with Brother Sharif and listening to all this stuff, I realize I did some some minor investigation on my property records, and I realized I might have been paying you an error. I'm looking at my property records, and I was wondering how you came about, and I'm not understanding why I've been paying you, but of course, society and a national bank are prostituting us on our labor, so they keep you busy. And keep those nice new cars rolling out, nice motorcycles, nice houses, nice clothes, nice electronics. They keep your mind working. They keep you working so you don't have time to study. So blessed is those that are on this call that is able to gain information, okay, to be able to use in commerce, because now you know a lot more than the average person that is working every day, 12 hours, 15 hours, too tired, come home, eat dinner, go to sleep, do it again. Those people are not going to be on this show. They're not going to know what's going on. They're going to sign those agreements. They're going to pay their mortgages. And at the end, when you try to get a satisfaction of the mortgage, they're going to be like, oops, we can't give you that. You know, and you'd be like, what? You've been paying us 3 years, and you really should have. But because we sent you a fancy letter in the mail and a statement, you know, this is how blind we are. We just start writing checks. Oh, I'm paying. We're happy to be able to just say we paid our mortgage this month. Really? You should be happy if you're paying the right creditor. And it is your job. I think the Georgia Supreme Court said it is your job, Mr. Homeowner, Mr. People, to ensure that you are paying the proper person. It's not their job. They're allowed to send you a letter, and you're allowed to send them a check. You understand what I mean? Period. I get all these emails. It's funny. I get these little emails from Nigeria and all these other places where they say, look, man, you won like $50 million. And people actually fall for that crap. I don't understand how they do. Look, give me your name and your number and, you know, come on and claim your $50 million. If I go and I give them, I say, but you got to pay, you know, I think one of the scams I was watching on TV, they say, well, you got to pay $10,000 for fees to get the $50 million. And these old elderly people, God bless their heart, and then some of the people that are naive that's probably listening to the news media and think that everything they hear and see is just truthful, they probably sent the $10,000, and the law enforcement tell them, like, what can I do? Like, you sent them the money. Like, that, I mean, did they scam you? No, they would have scammed you if they came and choked you and took the money. But you actually read what they had, and you sent them the money, okay, just like we do to the debt collectors, just like we do to some of the tax collectors. You sent them the money as a gift. Those of you know what I'm talking about, some of the debt collectors, government debt collectors. We send them the money. We fill out their forms. We tell them, you know, that we giving them this money. And then you turn around and be like, no, you committed fraud. No, we didn't. You filled out our forms. You asked us for some money, for some change back. You made a donation of $20, and you told us to give you $8 back. And that's what we did. You filled out our forms. You requested a service. And now you're going to complain that we committed fraud? No, we don't. That's what my co-host said. They do things right. They're just deceptive. And that's a powerful statement. They do things right. They're nice to you. Their letters look good. Okay, they're pleasant when you call them on the phone. You're not asking the right questions. You're not demonstrating the right education. So they do things right. They write things in their communications that you don't understand, and you don't ask the question, what does that word mean? What does that mean? You're just paying. You're just filling out forms because they said, go fill out that form. And you're just like, okay, if you fill out that form, I can give you some money back. You understand? Okay, so if I give you $20, you give me $6 back in. I'm gonna make you believe you should give me the damn $20. Well, you're not a victim. You're a victim of your own ignorance, and I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about as a whole. We're a victim of those pretty letters without looking at you and asking the question, being like, okay, so I was paying my mortgage to Bobby, and your name is Byron. Sounds like Bobby, and you trying to make it sound like Byron because you're really not saying Byron. You're saying Byron. So it sounds like Byron. You know what I'm saying? You're deceiving me now. What is your name? Your name is Byron. Oh, not Bobby. Okay. So this is Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, or this is Wells Fargo Home Loans. Those are two different entities. Who are you? Home Loans? Well, my contract says mortgage. Now, why are you sending me a letter talking about saying you see what I'm saying? This is what they do. So when you pay Wells Fargo Home Loan and your agreement says mortgage, who's the fool? Ain't nobody tricking you. You're not reading. when they send you a notice of default and they say, well, we're the lender, and you're looking at your documents, you say, well, wait a minute. It says here, I got a letter a month ago saying they were a servicer. When did you see what I mean? It's our fault. We're not reading, but we're having intercourse on a daily basis with this commercial world, and then we're going to complain, oh, they did us wrong. No, they didn't do us wrong. I had a call a couple of weeks ago say, well, you know, I changed my name, and I wanted to see, you know, they looking for the old name for a debt. I'm like, you really think you're going to get out of debt just because you changed your name? You think everything, like, God damn, I mean, everybody just changed their name and get a new credit report. Like, deal with your issues. You understand? You know that you're one and the same. You understand? Deal with your issues. Get rid of the debt. Take responsibility. Take that lump on the head. Pay it off. Make an agreement. Find some set off. Find some violations that you can wipe a lot of it off. And then don't do it again. Read your letters next time. It'd be like, hey, before I sign this, what does that mean right there when you say waiver of rights? What does that mean when you say right there I can't challenge, you know, this or challenge that? What does that mean right there when you say creditor or mortgagee or assignment? What does that – you follow what I'm saying? Ask some questions. And when you ask those questions, I think many of us wouldn't execute a lot of these instruments that we do. You understand? Because they're written by – they're written in a language that you damn well don't understand. Why would you go, if you was American, go to Russia and sign a damn contract that's written in Russian? Why would you go and execute a credit agreement that's written in legalese and you don't know the damn language? You understand? I mean, it's simple. Why would you go on a court and start wanting to talk like them when you don't know the entire language, but you're pouring out certain words? Yeah, I can go to Puerto Rico now, and I can speak a good bit of Spanish. I can understand some things and some things that I can't. But I'm not going to go to Puerto Rico and really start trying to have it, try to hold a conversation in full-blown Spanish, because they're going to say something to me that I'm not going to understand, or I'm going to agree to something that may cause me some problems. This is where we got to understand, okay? This is where your president, and I'm not bragging on your president, but I'm just saying certain things he says really sound good. He says he wants these contracts, these consumer contracts, more simpler, condensed, one or two pages, not these small fine print with four or five, you know, three-part carbon contracts, okay, copies to them. So he wants it more simpler, so because people don't understand that. We're just looking at the handbag, and we can get the credit card, but we're not reading the credit card agreement. And they know this. That's why they do advertisement, make it look pretty. You know, you can apply for a card today and be approved today and possibly save 20%, but you're paying 29% on the interest. Like, when are we going to wake up, brother? So hopefully, you know, that helps you, man. But definitely look at your records. Come back on the show next Tuesday. Tell me what you see. But right now, don't worry about it. You know, they're not going to come after you probably for a few months or even longer. You understand? There's a lot of foreclosures out there. It can be 6, 7, 8 months. You might pop a contract here soon. You know, you're not going to stay in that position you at. You just got to go out there and get it. And I honor you for going to get it yourself and not being employed. So when you say other, I want to say one last thing before I part with you. Watch our language. Mm-hmm. When you say you're employed, you need to look up that word. You can't use their language and then tell them, no, I'm not. You're not employed. That's their their description. You understand what I'm saying? You're not employed. Stop using that language. Again, stop using their words, but then say that you're bigger than them, you're better than them. Stop using, use your own words. Describe you as you want to describe you. You understand what I mean? And what you do as what you do, not what they do. Peace, love, and blessings. I appreciate you, brother. Keep rolling.
Peace, brother. I'll talk to you next.
All right, peace. Let's go to 773-2252.
773-2252,
your high frequency radio.
Peace.
Hey, sister queen, mother, honors.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I have a question.
I have an answer.
In the case of a mortgage, in any mortgage, have they actually loaned you anything?
All right, that's a good question. I'm glad you asked that question, all right? And I'm going to answer it like this, because I know where that question emanates, all right? There is a perception out there that your signature created the money. The bank just prints money. And I am in agreement that it takes no more ink to print a dollar bill than it does a $100 bill, okay? So let's say it costs 50 cents to print a dollar bill. It costs 50 cents to print a $100 bill. So there is the perception that, well, your signature created the money. Well, if a contract is on the table blank, no, it doesn't have any value until a signature is affixed to it. That doesn't mean they didn't lend you anything. That means they got to have a buyer for their merchandise, do they not? So if you walk into Best Buy and there's TVs up there, you can't say, well, when I sign the receipt, I'm creating the TV. You understand? No, the TV's up there. And of course, they're going to find a way to move the TV because they only make money by selling their merchandise, okay? The United States sells you their currency. That's why they tax it. That's why you have to pay a use fee on their currency because you don't have your own or you're not bartering or you're not using some other medium of exchange. So to use their money, you have to believe that their money is good, whereby you execute a contract using their money, using their rules of engagement, and you sign to that. So, Mother, are you saying that did they lend you money? Well, if the benefit was you're driving around in that new Porsche 911 and you sign that document and you obtain their merchandise, they lent you something. Otherwise, you'll be in a 2004 Yuzo that you paid cash for. So they lent you something. You're not going to go in court and convince the judge, well, you know what? You know, I created that damn thing, and you know, they would do that. Well, then how – if you came to my office and you needed some services and you signed a contract with me, what you going to tell me, Brother Sharif, I created – you know, I'm going to look at you and be like, okay, well, I'm going to show you how this stuff works against you too since you don't want to pay your bills. But let's get off of that. You're the beneficiary of a product. You have to pay for that product. You can't sign an agreement with them on some other terms and then come up later and be like, nah, you know what, I read this and I read that and I listened to this person on the show and I realized you really ain't loaned me nothing. Really? So I had to pay for that merchandise. It ain't free. Like that car you bought, I mean, I bought it, like I got that car, you picked that car out at the dealership. You went to that Jaguar dealership and I had to buy their merchandise. They didn't get it for free. They had to pay to ship it, to build it. Like, what do you – so you think now you can just sign off something and just be like, yeah, never mind, I don't want to pay for that no more. So let's get out of that. You be responsible and say, let me look at the documentation and make sure that your portion of the documentation is correct. Let me make sure that there's no fraud, okay, in your documentation because that would void a contract. So let's look at the documentation. In the documentation in my mortgage, it said that ABC Bank was the source of the funding for this particular loan. Well, I looked up ABC Bank, and then I looked up some secondary securitization information, and I determined that ABC Bank really didn't fund that because the investment bank over here, the REMIC over here, is saying that really they used the investor's money, and ABC Bank lied in their documents and said that they lent me the money. Now, what am I establishing there? On prima facie evidence that you lied. So if ABC Bank didn't lend me the money, and then I have an assignment that purportedly was authorized by ABC Bank going to somebody else, have I not established that the assignment is really of no probate of value because ABC Bank never lent me anything? I have information saying that the REMIC lent me something, but am I saying the REMIC lent me something? No, I'm saying it appears, because you really don't know all the facts. You just really know that there's something fishy in there. ABC Bank don't really have a lot of money. I looked them up. They're a small mortgage company. Where are they getting their money from? They can't lie and say they loaned you something, okay, and do transfers and assignments, and then later on you determine that somebody else was the source of the funds. That is against the law, okay? That is against several consumer protection laws. That is called a straw purchase. It's like illegal for you to go down and buy a car and it'd be for somebody else and you say it's for you. That's called a straw purchase, okay? So if you want to bring the straw man stuff theory in, that's where I think straw really applies, is that's a straw purchase. So you can't say you loaned me money really when Bobby over here loaned me the money. And then Bobby's going to sit and then you don't pay me back. And Barry is going to say, well, Bobby, I use your money, but she's not paying me back. So, Bobby, I guess you got to take the loss, okay? And then Barry turns around and try to confiscate the property, although he know he didn't pay for it. So that's what you have going on in the mortgage arena. So all you say is do your homework and say that, Judge, this is what I tell people to say. Okay, and you can phrase it and frame it the way you want. Judge, I'm not saying that somebody provided the funds for a transaction that I desired. Somebody did it. Because I look, it's as bad as my signature looks and as neat as my writing, I can't create money based on signing. I can create commercial agreements based on signing, okay? But I can't create money. So what I'm saying is there is some creditor out there. Somebody out there loaned this money. And because ABC Bank lied, I don't know the true source of who the money is owed to. What I can prove to you through admissible evidence before this court is that this documentation is fraudulent. And ABC Bank misled me, and I have the evidence that shows that ABC Bank did not fund this transaction. So ABC Bank is dead. They're insolvent. They went out of business a long time ago. But then I got Bobby over here talking about I really owe him the money. Well, how can I owe the money to Bobby if he got it from ABC Bank when ABC Bank didn't fund the situation? So then let's say the judge say, well, who you think funded the situation? Well, I think Bobby did, or the Remick did. Let's just say the Remick. Let me exclude the Bobby thing. Well, I think the Remick did. Well, wouldn't the Remick be the creditor? Maybe, Judge, but then I'm looking at the documentation, and I realize the Remick didn't get the proper documentation to be able to express an interest in it either. So what we have here, Judge, is that I proved to you that Mr. Bank doesn't own my mortgage. I proved to you that ABC Bank wasn't the source of the funds. And I proved to you that the Remick that really paid for it is indemnified by certain insurances, credit default swap insurance and everything else. And they've been paid on it. So what I'm telling you, I should be the only beneficiary of this transaction, meaning that I'm the only one that's kept this home. Okay, and the home, although the home is worth $200,000, okay, and why is it worth $200,000? Well, he's saying that you owe $300,000 on a note. Well, Judge, let me ask you a question. If the home was boarded up and I didn't do anything with it, and I let the grass grow, and I let the roof cave in, and I let the roaches and whatnot take it over, would it be worth what it's worth today? No, but it's because I kept it up. I'm a neat person. I've maintained the building. That's why it's worth what it's worth today. It is my property. And all I'm telling you to do, Judge, is you don't want to issue an order directing me or demanding me to give my property to somebody that's not entitled to it. You wouldn't want to write an order, would you, Judge, and tell me to give my property to somebody I've already showed that doesn't have any interest in it, and I've provided that evidence to you. Okay, now, I'm not saying I don't owe anybody, Judge, but at this point, until the real creditor shows up with some documentation, and if he does show up, I got a long conversation for him because I got a lot of breaches of this agreement. So when the real creditor shows up, there's going to be a whole lot of set off, and probably that real creditor, after he speaks with me, will probably not want to pursue my home because the breaches will exceed the amount, the face amount of that note. Do you follow me, Mother?
Yes.
Okay. So that's how I would handle that situation. Look in your paperwork, do your investigation, do your research, okay, and determine who everybody are. Who, as I always say, identify, okay? Identify who it is. These people say they're this. I'm looking at 15 U.S.C. 1692A6. And they appear to be a debt collector. Even their documentation, if it was to be believed, okay, shows clearly that they're a debt collector because they acquired that debt while it was in default. End of story. So they're over here in this lane, Judge. They're over here on the debt collector side. They're not over here on the creditor side. And then with the evidence that I'm showing you that ABC Bank didn't fund it, they're not even a debt collector, to be honest with you. They're pretenders, okay? So I'm asking the court, I'm letting you know, Judge, I'm giving you that evidence, and I'll testify to that evidence, and I'll take the stand. And if they're willing to take the stand, too, under oath and say that I owe them money and that I received a loan from even ABC Bank, they will not be willing to take the stand and say that. They'll say it in their pleadings because they're not under oath. But they're not willing to take the stand and be subject to cross-examination under oath and say that, yeah, ABC loaned you money when you already provided evidence that ABC, more than likely or more likely than not, did not fund that transaction. Game over. You got it?
So I got it. Are you familiar with cases where people handled it like that and it was ruled in their favor to keep the home?
I always get that question. Yes, I have.
Plenty of time.
Okay.
Okay? But listen, what I try to do is provide the encouragement, all right, the education,
mm-hmm.
and the information. It's up to us to have the confidence. What I just told you was factual, and it was simple, and it was the truth. I know that society and the news media and the programming has us thinking that we have to go to the legal society to be able to have common sense. You understand? What I told you is a simple way of looking at your contract and be like, this is not true. Let me investigate. Let me look on the Secretary of State. Let me look up this. Let me do that. Let me gain some information. And then you don't have to go to an attorney. Sometimes you will, but you just have to ask questions. And you just be willing to go to court and say, Judge, I mean, you know, the evidence rule applies, right? The rules of evidence apply, right? Right. And you know, testimony is needed to support any claim, right? Right. And, you know, if there's fraud in the factum of fraud in this contract, and I can point that out with specificity, that you know that you must not let this action proceed, correct? Okay, great. That's all I wanted to know. And is counsel here with a witness today? Because I have some questions that, you know, or unless counsel is willing to take the stand, if he can continue testifying that I owe some debt, you understand, then I'm going to ask him to take the stand and see what personal firsthand knowledge he may have. Other than that, I'm telling you that I executed this contract 20 years ago, and this is what me and the original lender agreed to, and I'm telling you I've since determined that the original lender lied to me, and they're gone, and they're not here. So that means nobody else that came after them is able to state a fact without admissible evidence and without providing some sort of testimony under oath, as I'm willing to do. You understand? Say it the way you want, but this is the stance you need to take. And you need to do some studying, but you don't need to go to college for 10 years. All right?
Got you.
All
okay,
right.
I have another question.
All right, go ahead.
Would it be best to take a look at your mortgage and challenge them on it if you see the fraud and be the plaintiff in the case if you stop paying them?
All depends. Well, I have a strategic mind. Well, let's say you're in a judicial foreclosure state, you're not necessarily educated enough, or you don't have the financial wherewithal to hire an attorney, and you want to gain some more knowledge and experience to be able to go sue them yourself, and you're in a judicial state. Do you want to go ahead and bring a premature complaint against a law firm who's going to employ the services of do you want to really attack or sue a banking industry who's going to employ a law firm that's much more experienced than you prematurely? No. Or do you want to say, okay, I'm in a judicial state, so I know they have to bring the fight to me. So I know that takes, you know, a few years, and I have time, so maybe I'll just wait and study, and before that judicial action is initiated, I might sue them as a plaintiff, which is going to thwart them from filing their action, making me a defendant. It's all about where you're at. It's all about strategy. It's all about you sitting down and really thinking through what's going to be best for you. Or you might decide, okay, well, I know they're not going to come after me for another year. I'm going to save up some money. I'm going to find me a good attorney, and I'm going to let him go at him based on his record, because I'm going to ask him, how many foreclosures have you won or thwarted? Okay, what have you done? Show me your case law. Give me the case numbers. Let me pull up and see how, okay, effective or ineffective you are. And that's going to take you some time to find. You follow what I mean? So
I got it.
That's all I can tell you, Mother, and hopefully that helps, all right?
Yes, thank you very much. Peace.
Thank you. Peace and blessings. All right, we got 10 minutes left in the live stream. That means you need to call in if you plan on getting in on this call. If you're already on, you can just continue listening. There's another hour left after the 10 minutes and 14 seconds. Those of you in the chat, remain where you're at, and you can continue to listen. All right? All right. Wow, where am I at? Let's go to Lost my place. All right, that's where I was at. Let's go to 330. I believe that's Ohio. 330-5677. 330-5677. Your high frequency radio. You have a question for Brother Sharif? 5677. Your line is open. Do you have a question? All right. Let's go to 504. 504-0376. You're on high frequency radio. Do you have a question for Brother Sharif?
Yes, sir. How you doing, Brother Sharif?
How well, brother? How you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I talked to you a couple of months ago. I listened to you, and my wife was sick, and she had stopped paying the notes. So I called him up, and then I stopped paying them. I got the money. I just stopped paying them. And they sent me a letter. It's Nation Star, and they said they're going to foreclose on my mortgage, and they said they're a note holder. But then at the top, they said they're a servicer. And then at the end of this letter, it says they're debt collector.
Wow. I like the way you break that down, brother. So it sounds like you got the Dalai Lama, the president, the chief of the Indian tribe, and the constable all in one hat.
That's what it sounds like.
All right. Well, good. At least you were able to identify that. So let me tell you about Nation Star. Nation Star, let me see how I can put this. They can be perceived as all of them. Why? Because Nation Star, I believe, and I don't have any factual information regarding this, but I know they're one of the biggest debt buyers out there. Okay? So basically, I think there's a lot of heavy money, private equity funds, different investors, foreign and domestic, that got together and is funding Nation Star, who has bought, I believe the last time I looked, $250 billion in mortgage servicing rights or defaulted debt. Now, the media will always, depending on where you get your news, Bloomberg is a good source, they will always tell you what they bought. And what you will find when you research them is you find they bought $200 billion in servicing rights. Okay? They'll tell you that clearly because they're definitely not buying any good loans. I mean, who goes out there and buys good loans? You get a defaulted loan, and you can get it for what I always say, 3 to 5 cents on a dollar. You understand? So they go around. They got some big money backers. They buy all this defaulted debt, you know, secondary market debt, REMIC debt, you know, charged off debt, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then what they do is when they send you the letter and you read the article saying they bought servicing rights, they'll put in the content and body of their letter, we're the servicer, we're the note holder, because they think they bought some notes. We all know you can't even find a note today. You know, I don't know how many cases I've been like, okay, I got the money, we'll pay you. Okay, we're making an offer. We're tendering payment. Meet us at court on the 30th for a hearing, and if you bring that original, genuine note, we'll pay it off totally. And you know what? I haven't had one yet. Now, I don't do the accept the note thing. I just throw it in as an offer, as tender. Like, I'm offering it to you. If you can provide a full chain of title and that original note, look, I want it out of circulation. I need that note because it's my note. It's not your note. Okay, the note is a collateral. I need that note back to make sure you're not still selling it and make sure nobody else get a copy of that note. And you notice I said copy and come after me twice about this debt. So meet me at the court, okay, and we'll swap. And I haven't had one to do that yet. So they claim that they're the note holder, the note owner, and the servicer, meaning that they completely bought the entire balance or remainder or frame or appearance of a debt. They're debt collectors. Nation Star is nothing but a debt collector. No different than Portfolio Assets and ABC mom and pop collection agency. They're no different. They just got bigger pockets. And they decided to get into this industry, which everybody is walking around being doofuses and not knowing that they can steal real property instead of trying to collect, you know, people's old electric bill. You understand? So you have a lot of these companies popping up, and Nation Star is one of them, that says that, you know, people are so stupid and they don't read, and we can go in there and actually buy up this country's real property with some BS paperwork that cost us like 20 cents for a piece of paper. How much is paper? 20 cents? We can do that. You know, have a nice department and start taking people's property because they're not reading, they're not educating themselves, they're not knowledgeable, and all the evidence is right before them within their agreement, within their mortgage contract, within their security deed, within their deed of trust, within their mortgage. You understand what I'm saying? So it's easy right now because people are working, they got two jobs, they're trying to, you know, put the Jordans on their feet, they're trying to go to the Broadway shows, they're trying to fly on vacation. You understand what I mean? It's a lot of them that they'll never have to go against because the people are, they should start sending a letter and be like, we're your new mortgage holder. Send a nice, pretty letter and be like, send your payments to us. And they'll be like, okay, fine. We just want the credit for saying to Sally and Jane next door, we're current on our mortgage. We pay all our bills this month. How about you? What you pay Nation Star? You ain't pay for nothing. You're an idiot because you didn't look into why this transition happened. You didn't look into the company. You just sent the letter out. I always say when I treat a lot of my students, I can get money out of all of y'all. I can design a nice, pretty letter and be like, your electric bill is not being handled by Georgia Natural Gas anymore. It's going to Sharif Gas and Light. And I promise you, out of 10 people, I know I would snag at least 7 of y'all to send me your gas bill money. Do you understand? I know y'all will because we program like that. Nice letterhead, nice little customer service number. I'll put a Google number on that and put a nice number and get a nice program that makes the bills look legit, and y'all will pay it, okay? Which is why I'm having this show. We need to get more educated. So, brother, you need to send them out a debt validation dispute letter. You need to ask some specific questions. Okay, Nation Star, you're saying that you are a holder. Now, you can hold what you want. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't care what you're holding. It's not yours. What do you mean you're holding it? And how are you playing all three roles? So you're the servicer, you're the holder, and then on the bottom, which is the only reason why they have language that we're a debt collector, is if they're an intermediary. So that means you have to be collecting a debt for somebody else. So how are you going to be holding the debt, be the owner of the debt, be the servicer of the debt, but be collecting the goddamn debt? Excuse my language. I'm sorry. Okay? How can you be knowing that? If you're the creditor, you're not collecting it. You're collecting your own debt. You understand what I'm saying? You're still subject to the FDCPA for some violations, but you're not necessarily a debt collector unless you're collecting that debt for somebody else, or, which is why they send you that letter, they obtain the debt while they're in default. You understand what I'm saying? Then you can be a debt collector. That means you're the holder, the servicer, the bread baker, the hamburger and the french fry guy for whatever you thought you bought. You understand what I mean? So, you know, that's the type of language that they're going to have in there. All right? So definitely you need to fire off a couple of letters, brother, and you need to take some offensive measures to make sure that they don't contact you again or they provide you with the information that's supporting those three roles that they claim that they play.
Yeah, I got your first lecture you did, I mean, webinar. I never had to do it because I'm at work right now. I'm running, but.
Okay.
Is anybody in this area? I'm in New Orleans.
You say what?
You got anybody down in New Orleans? This away?
New Orleans. No. No, I don't. Email me. I'll try to find your group. I have a couple of people that down in Louisiana that is doing some things, and maybe, you know, they're familiar with those laws, so you're close. So just email me, and I'll send you their information, and maybe you can learn something from them, all right?
All right. Thank you, brother.
All right, brother, thank you. Peace and blessings. All right, we got 30 seconds left in the live stream. We're going to still go on beyond this for a little while. But if you want to call in, 424-222-5250. We're going to move forward. I think I already did that one. Let's go to 816-354-8. You're on Frequency Radio. You got a question? Hello? All right. We're going to move on. Let's go to 412-1568, 412-1568. You got a question?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you clear.
Okay. Yeah, I got two questions. In your paperwork, your stuff is real thorough, too. And you always say
Thank
that
you,
these debt collectors, they can only bring action against you in a judicial district or likewise. I don't know if
1692I.
Right.
I, that's what it says.
Okay. Now, most of these courts, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's not on a superior court level, these courts are administrative, non-judicial courts. Is that correct or not?
You're going too deep with that. You know, you're...
Okay, the reason I'm asking because if it's not a superior court up, there's never no case law. Okay, because everything that I'm reading, if they're they're administrative, non-judicial courts because they fall up under administrative code. From understanding, these courts only are judicial courts once they get up to superior court and up. Now, if it's a common pleas court or what is that called, a municipal court, that is not a judicial court.
My brother, I think I remember you from last week, and I know you heavy into, you know. You wasn't on last week?
No, sir.
Okay. Week before that?
I always listen to your show, but I wasn't on last week.
Got you. I will say this. It really doesn't matter. Okay? By operation of your contract, okay, and let me extrapolate one of my co-hosts and my brother's common terms that I like, minimum contact. Look, as long as they take you to a court that can adjudicate the matter, you shouldn't worry whether you're in Iraq in a desert with a podium, an administrator, okay, and the debt collecting their attorney. Your confidence should be that, look, I'll smoke you in the back of the club if you come with this nonsense. You're not a creditor. So I don't care where you bring it. I just want you to bring it because when you try to bring it, I'm going to make you write me a check. Like, we don't care whether those are – take me to an administrative court for all intents and purposes. I don't care. My knowledge, my superiority, my education, my experience, you understand? I don't have to put on a robe to dance. I don't have to put on the shoes. I'm the type of dude I can walk down the street with my slippers on and my swag and my strut is the same as if I had $500 gaiters on. It don't matter. So I don't care what court you bring me in. I'm not going to argue that. And the judge is going to look at you like you crazy. Like, what difference will it make? What I want to do is engage this debt collector because I know they're going to slip up and make a mistake and say that they're a creditor or say that they're a mortgagee or say that I owe them a debt or they're going to try to take an action non-judicially when 1692I says that they can't. That's all I want to do. We can be on top of the roof. It don't matter. Just give me whoever you want to bring. Bring whoever you want to bring. Bring me a whole firm. Bring me 6 people. Bring me 10 people. Bring me 8 robo-signers. I don't care who it is. I'm going to prevail based on the facts and my knowledge.
Okay, there was a follow-up question to that because anytime, you know, they do a so-called tax sale, which is from a tax sale is non-judicial, where they just decide we're going to just go ahead and just basically sell your property. Now, when they assign these debts over to these debt collectors, which are attorneys, and they have a tax sale, is that if they're a debt collector, is that judicial? If they have it like, you know, the city makes up a deed or whatever, we're going to have a tax sale. Is that judicial or not? Or does it matter? They don't take the court. They just go ahead and do their thing. It's like it's a bill of attainder. You're already guilty. We're going to do our thing, and that's it. Because usually people have
that's,
to file.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what I'm saying to you is that I can engage you in this intercourse for a long time when we talk a bill of attainder and writ of attachment and, you know,
okay.
all that language is going to confuse most of my listeners. What I'm saying is to you, brother, respectful, is that I don't care. I don't give a damn. A tax sale, pay your taxes. You don't need to fight 2 different battles. Pay your taxes so you don't have that issue and then do your research and see whether you should pay taxes. But you don't want to be fighting a National Banking Association and a law firm and fighting a city or county or the state because you agreed to participate in the taxing department or in the taxing revenue arena. So whether you say a bill of attainder, they ain't going to hear that. The thing is, you got a contract, you agree to a debt. The contract says that they have to do this and do that as a condition proceeding. They're not doing that. So I don't care where we go. You can tell me, which I tell everybody, meet me at McDonald's. Let's talk about this. Just bring your checkbook. That's all. Let me save you some trouble. And I've said this going in before. Are you sure you want to go in here with this case, man? You want to proceed? Because I'm trying to save you some trouble. Because I'm telling you, shouldn't we talk? I think we should talk before you hurt yourself, like you're about to really hurt yourself. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not going to lose. Okay, I'm telling you I'm not going to lose. And if I do lose at this stage, I'm not going to lose at the next stage. But this is what the problem you're going to have. Everything you say, I got to allow you to talk, because every time you open up your mouth, I'm going to fix a dollar amount to it. So I got to let you talk. You understand? I want you to talk. I want you to write. I want you to plead. Because everything you write on that piece of paper, once it's on the record, it's forever there. Everything you filed in that county, those assignments, those liens, whatever it is, or that bill, or that Dunning notice, or you saying I owe taxes, once I have a memorandum of that conversation or a writing, I can hold that writing, and based on the statute of limitations, I'm going to bring my actions against you based on what you wrote to me or based on what you said to me if I have it recorded. That's all I focus on, brother. I don't focus on the rest of this stuff. I want to engage. I want to get you talking. I want to ask questions. I want to get answers. And then based on that, I want to prepare an action and sue you for damages and liability for lying to me, for deceiving me, or attempting to steal my property or my energy or my time. Okay? And that's it. I mean, I don't struggle with the rest of the issues that you're talking about. I don't struggle with that. I just try to pick my battles, and my battles is which battle is going to make me the most money. I'm going to pay the taxes right now because I don't know enough about it. They did a tax sale. Maybe they can do a tax sale. County says they can do a tax sale. They can foreclose on you if you let them. You understand? They can do anything they want if you let them. And I'm not going to argue about whether they can do it or not. I'm going to focus on, okay, which thing is going to get me more money? I'm going to pay these taxes right now because that's the obligation I've made to the county. You understand? But let me deal with this debt collector right now, because if I knock them out, I'll get some money, and then maybe I'll go study on, you know, whether I owe any tax. You feel what I'm saying? So that's where we at with that. All right, let's go. 816-3158. 816-3548. You're on our frequency radio. You have a question?
I have.
All right, let's go to 267-3782. 267-3782, you're on high frequency radio. You have a question?
Yes, Islam, Brother Sharif, how are you today?
Islam, peace and blessings, mother. How are you?
Okay. My question is in reference to utility service who either transfer or sells their debt to debt collectors. Is that considered a creditor? Are utilities companies considered creditors?
Yes, because you apply for services with them. They're providing a service to you, or you can hire somebody to do say you go out and you hire somebody to do your taxes. Yeah, they're a creditor. They're offering you some sort of service. So, yeah, the utility department is a creditor.
Okay, because I never looked at them, but in this collection notice, which is the standard language that they always say.
Yeah, they don't have to lend you money to be a creditor. I can lend you services. Like, you call me and get a consultation. I'm considered a creditor. You can't send me a debt validation dispute. If you got a contract with me and I offer you a service, I'm a creditor. You're a debtor for purposes you paid me. Or if I offer you services on a payment plan, I'm considered a creditor. You understand? But once you sell that debt to Bobby Lou's collection agency, now it changes.
Okay.
Now you're a debt collector. You're not collecting your own debt. You're collecting the debt that you may have purchased for pennies or dollars. More than likely, you paid pennies, all right? And now you're trying to collect on someone else's debt based on what someone else said, based on someone else's documentation that's not necessarily authentic.
Okay. So
you can go to court and say, my son got punched in the face. I didn't see him, but his friend told me he got punched in the face. That's considered hearsay. Well, you didn't see your son get punched in the face, did you? No. Then you have no testimony to offer us here today.
We got 30 people that said that he had, you know, a punch in his face, but we're trying to look for witnesses that actually seen him get punched in the face. You understand?
Right. So within the base of this notice that it has, the client is the utility, but yet in the base of the letter or whatever this instrument is, it says about if you request this office in writing within 30 days after receiving this notice, this office will provide you with the main address of the original creditor if different from the current creditor. So, if the client's supposed to be the said utility company, I'm a little bit confused with this. Who would be the creditor now? The people who bought the debt?
Oh, no, what they're telling you in their Dunning letters, they're saying, look, if you dispute it, we'll give you the name. Okay, let's look at that. We'll give you the name and address of the original creditor. Does that satisfy you for determining that they got a legitimate debt because you give me the name and the address of some creditor? Well, for purposes of mortgages, let's say you got ABC Bank on your mortgage, and then you send them a debt validation dispute, and they say, okay, if you dispute that debt, we'll give you the name and address to the mortgage or the alleged mortgagee that was in business but is now gone. Well, what use is that of me to me? What good is that to me? Like, what is that going to do, the name and address? Okay, I got your name and address. Well, what does that mean? I'm saying I don't owe you a debt. I'm saying I don't even know what debt you're talking about. And the name and address to the debt, like, well, that would be on some documentation. What does that? How does that translate into me owing you a debt because you got the name and address of somebody? Does that satisfy you?
Yes.
Okay, let's say you recognize the purpose. I'd be like, okay, I recognize that I had power through this electric company. I know their name and address. My question to you is, can you prove that I owe you, one, a debt, and that amount of the debt, and can you prove that you're a creditor? That's all I want to know. It's simple.
Okay.
Like, what
okay.
is your business that I had some contract with somebody else? How do you have anything to do with this? What do you have to do with this matter? What is it that you want? So you heard that I had an account, or you seen some documentation file somewhere that demonstrated that I had intercourse with somebody. What does that have to do with you? Why are you calling me? You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
This is period. You know what I mean? That's like you being in the paper for you in the paper for doing something, and somebody call you out the blue, be like, "Yeah, I seen your name in the paper." You be like, "Okay, like so what? Like, what you calling me for? Like, what does that have to do with you?" You know, in New York, that's called mind your business. What is that? Like, mind your business. You understand what I mean? Mind your business.
Right.
Like, what does that have to do with you? Why are you calling me about that? Well, I heard you owe somebody $100,000. Okay, well, I'm calling to try to see if I can get a piece of it because I know that person don't exist anymore, i.e. these mortgage companies. So we knew that you had $100,000 stashed over here. We want a piece of it. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's called extortion in street terms. Let's call it extortion, being that I just know about something, you know. But that doesn't prove a debt, mother, is what I'm saying. You got to have them prove the debt. Prove I owe you a debt, and why are you demanding of me money that doesn't belong to you? Can you provide a contract that I have with you, not with somebody else?
Right, right, right. All right, then. I'm good. Thank you
All
for
right.
your time.
Peace. Thank
Keep
you.
Up.
All right. Thank you, sister. Thank you, mother. Sorry to cut you off quick. I was trying to move forward. All right, 469-6123, you're on High Frequency Radio. Do you have a question?
Thank you, my call, Brother Sharif.
Absolutely.
My question is, I got two, but my first one is, now, when you go in and you do business with a corporation, and, you know, when you sit down to the table and you sign the contract, you don't sign it with a corporation. You actually sign it with an agent, correct?
Say that for me one more time.
Okay, say you're signing a car contract. Say you bought your car at ABC Auto, which is the company, right? But when you sit down and sign this contract, ABC Auto is not the party that's there that you're going through this contract with, and he signs his name here and you sign your name there. So the agent of ABC Auto, can he be held liable too if ABC Auto breaches that contract?
I see what you're saying. In the world of commerce, you're always going to have a middle person. What I mean by, let's say you buy a Toyota. Well, the Toyotas are made over in China, I believe. They're made, some of them are made here. But let's say it's merchandise. So you have a plant that creates and builds the merchandise and then goes to a reseller or, let's say, a dealership. It might be mom-and-pop dealership. It might be Johnny Brandon dealership, but it goes to a dealership. And then you have the dealership that gets the merchandise from the plant and makes an arrangement to, look, I'll carry and sell your merchandise. And they'll agree to hold that merchandise. Now, the Toyota dealership is not Toyota. It's just a dealership that sells Toyota. They're not Toyota themselves. They're distributors is what they're called. So Toyota then will come in, and you'll be like, okay, you're buying your car from ABC Toyota, but then the financing is done through Bank of New York, let's just say, for example. Okay? So when they do the contract, Bank of New York is buying the vehicle for you from ABC Toyota. But the financing is done through Bank of New York because that's just where you selected to buy your vehicle. So on the contract, it'll be, okay, me as the merchandiser, as the merchant, is selling this merchandise to this consumer, but we don't necessarily we're not necessarily held liable if the product doesn't work right. So they'll tell you you need to call the manufacturer. You understand what I'm saying? But when they do when they buy the merchandise for you from ABC Toyota, Bank of New York is responsible for the purchase. But you can't turn around and say, okay, well, I selected to buy my vehicle from ABC Toyota, and the vehicle is not working right. They're going to say, well, you need to go back to ABC Toyota. No, I can't hold you responsible because you did the purchase from me and you financed the vehicle. Now you want to give the vehicle back to me. No, you made a grown-up decision. You decided to buy your vehicle from ABC Toyota. I just oblige you by providing the finance for your purchase. So who's responsible for the financing is Bank of America. Who's responsible for whatever they're responsible for within their contract, ABC Toyota, they would be responsible for whatever they're responsible in that contract. Like they may say, look, we just hold Toyota product, but if you got a problem, you have to go to Toyota Motor Corp to get your vehicle fixed. We're just a merchandiser. We just hold the merchandise for them. We are not Toyota themselves. So you would have to go with, they might say, we got to get the manufacturer to honor your warranties are not dealer warranties unless you buy a used dealership, and usually still that's a limited warranty for 30, 60 days, or they'll get an extended warranty whereby a warranty servicing company will hold the warranty and guarantee your warranty. So you can't go back to the dealership and be, my car's broke. They'd be like, well, do you have a warranty? You're like, no, but I bought it from you. But, yeah, we just hold merchandise. You understand what I mean? You could go to Best Buy and buy a Sanyo TV. You also can buy a Philips TV from there. They're just merchandisers. But when you buy that TV, the store will be like, okay, we'll guarantee you 30 days or something like that, just in case, you know, it shifted in the truck and it was broke. But if you have anything longer than that, it comes with a manufacturer's warranty. And those are the people that's responsible for the operate, the functioning of that merchandise. So what you're asking me is, could you sue Best Buy for Philips or Sanyo making a bad TV? No. But if Best Buy knew that the TVs were bad and they sold it to you anyway, could you sue Best Buy? Yeah, because you knew that Philips and Sanyo made bad TVs and you sold it to me anyway. Does that help you?
Well, a little bit, but I guess mine is on a smaller scale. Okay, I bought a car from a, I guess you would call it a small company, Totonote.com, right? They breached the contract by selling it to another company. You know what I'm saying? They tried to get me to make the payment to another company, but what I did a debt validation on the other company because I didn't sign a contract with the other company. You see what I'm saying? So they never answered back, so I defaulted them out, so I went back to the company that I went to. I said, well, hey, you know, even in your contract, it states that you cannot sell to with me without my permission, but you did anyway. Well, once they found out, I guess I knew what was going on, they come and take the truck. So what I wanted to know was, as because the owner of the company is the one I actually sat down with and did the contract with, but I know I have to I guess, sue them as a company as well. But can I hold the owner responsible as well, seeing that he is the mind that I meant to go into contract with? You see, because these people have a tendency to hide behind these pieces of paper when they are the ones that's actually doing the unjust deeds.
Okay. I think I remember you calling some time ago. I have a great memory, and I remember kind of addressing this before and the complexity of it, and I think I kind of ironed it out, so it's real difficult. So let me try to answer this short and go to the next call. You bought a car from a buy here, pay here. Buy here, pay here is do one or two things. They buy cars from auctions, or they buy it from wherever they buy it, and they sell it to you either doing owner financing, meaning that they finance you themselves, called in-house financing, meaning that they are holding the note, their name is on the note, and you pay them. Or being a merchandiser, they provide a financing source. They might send your contract to a bank, and a bank finances your car. If it's done the latter way with the bank, meaning that the car dealership is just selling you the product, then they have to guarantee the product somehow to you that they're not selling you, that they're not selling you a defective product. That's their only liability. But as far as the financing and your payments, that goes to the lending source that provided the financing. So let's say you bought the car from him and you didn't make payments, then the bank is going to come back and take your car regardless of what beef you have with the dealership, because their thing is, look, we only signed on to buy the car that you asked us to buy for you and finance it. That's our only responsibility. We ain't calling the dealership to do nothing if your tire fall off. That's something you need to go after the dealership. You decide where you're going to buy your vehicle from. So sounds like you had a creditor, man, and you pissed them off, because you start sending them the wrong documentation, which is why I always say, stop calling a creditor a debt collector and a debt collector a creditor. Don't call a policeman. You don't call a policeman when there's a fire. You call a fireman. So call people by their right name and title. And if you got a police matter, then you're not going to call a fire department. So it sounds like you pissed somebody off because you called them out of their name and you sent them the wrong documentation, and they think you're trying to find a way to get out of your obligation, and they came and took your vehicle. Now, if they came and took your vehicle, it had to be the person that lent you money for that transaction. Okay?
Well, see, that's the deal. The automobile was never behind, even when they took it. It wasn't behind on the payment. You see, all I was really trying to do was get clarity of what was going on.
Okay,
you know,
but this is what they have to do, brother, and I got to go to the next call. If they took it, they probably took it because your communications, like the other brother, where you pulling out the Oval Office and you attaching it to some document making a subliminal threat. You understand what I mean? When you start sending those communications and you start putting language that doesn't or collides with the contract, the agreement you have, then that lender, just like I would if I loaned you money, or if I loaned you some merchandise, if you start acting all crazy on me and start sounding like you trying to get out of this debt, I got a right to indemnify myself and protect myself and come take my merchandise, because it sounds like you're about to default or you think I'm somebody that I'm not. So I'm coming to protect myself. I'm going to snatch your vehicle. And there's some provision in that contract that says if you do X and Y, Z, you owe me money. So if you start doing things that the contract doesn't allow you to do, or you start making little gestures and threats and moves that make me think that my collateral may be in jeopardy, I'm going to come take it from you. Do you understand? I don't care if you paid up or not. You ain't paid the loan off. So you still have a balance. I have a right not to lose $5. And if I feel like what you're saying and this kind of talk that you're projecting towards me doesn't apply to me, I'm going to be like, you know what, sounds like he getting a little skittish, and sounds like I'm going to be able to see my car no more. He might leave town. Let me go get my stuff, all right, and deal with that later, because I'm not trusting him anymore. And I'm going to take my stuff, and I'm going to say, listen, you paid this amount, but you owe me another $5,000. I'm not comfortable with your communication and your threats, so I need my $5,000, and you can get your car back. If you don't, I'm going to sell it. for whatever the market value is. If you owed any change, I'll give you the change, but I'm ready to sever this agreement in this relationship because I don't like the way you're acting. All right?
Yeah, that sounds like theft to me, especially just because you created the traverse. All I was asking was, which one of y'all do I owe? Because I'm getting billed from both parties now.
Brother, you should know. Like, with all due respect, it's no traverse there. Because although you gave me a situation, a scenario that sounds complicated, I'm able to feel through it and tell you there is no complication. Just like when I tell people about their mortgages, there is no complication. All you got to do is read your contract, and it will tell you who can do what they can and what they cannot do. You signed an agreement to buy a car. It's real simple. I've done it many times. The agreement is you're buying the merchandise from Walmart. Walmart doesn't guarantee the merchandise because they hold merchandise from many different brands. All we guarantee is that when you open up the TV box, it ain't going to be broke. You understand what I'm saying? But if you got a problem, go to the manufacturer. You bought a car. You bought a car from somebody, and on that car, you know where you send your payments to. It's real simple. You know where the payments go to. You've been paying the payments. So if you know who the creditor is, why are you asking who the creditor is? You know who you're supposed to pay. So if you're sending some communication that's off, that's offline, and it sounds like that lender is saying, that ain't, he know I loaned him money, and he know he's been paying me for X amount of times. Why is he asking me this stupid question? And he's acting like he's skittish and he don't want to pay anymore, so I'm going to go and snatch my merchandise. That ain't theft. That's what I would do to you if I was similarly situated. I'm going to do that. If you start sending me communications, I'm going to take the car because it's my car. It's not your car until you pay it off. You understand what I'm saying? It's my car. I have a right to protect my interest.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't think you heard what I said. I think that's why you got that perception, because what I said was he sold it to a finance company. That's what I'm saying.
No, he didn't. He didn't sell it, brother, to a finance company. What he did is had the finance company do the financing for the vehicle. And you're and let's say he did. Let's say you started out with ABC Bank doing the financing, and then ABC Bank said, "Look, I don't want to carry secondary paper anymore. I don't want to be in the wholesale business. I don't want to be in the secondary credit market. I'm going to sell these accounts off to somebody else." But they're good accounts. They're current and they're good. They got a right to transfer that. It's not hurting you. You're just going to continue to pay who's holding that note, and you got to pay that note holder. So if the contract say he, I don't know what contract is out there that says I can't sell a debt the right way, or I can't transfer a debt the right way. I haven't seen one of those contracts, and I've bought probably hundreds of cars. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, you have two words in there. You have assign, which he can do. He can assign, and then you have the word sold, which also says that he cannot do that, and if he does, it voids it. I mean, he even wrote back the letter telling me that he sold it.
Okay,
he didn't say nothing about it.
So, brother, if that's the case, right, and you felt that he breached contract, why are you asking him questions? Sue him and be like, that's a breach of the agreement. Well, then,
right,
if you didn't sue him, and if you didn't sue him and you jeopardize your transportation by pissing off your creditor when he said, look, I bought the contract, pay me your payments just like you paid the last person, and you called the last person, he said, hey, man, did you sell that contract over to these dudes? Like, yeah, we sold it. Like, we out the business. Like, they got a right to go out of damn business and be like, oh, I got a right to be like, I'm going to make the best decision for my company, and I don't want to hold this paper anymore, so I'm going to sell it. Then they got a right to do that. Your question should have been, okay, so I need to pay him now. Oh, okay. But then I'm looking at the contract, man, and I'm thinking that you shouldn't have sold it. But am I going to have a problem with the guy that you sold it to if he's not asking me for any more than the contract reads? No. Why am I have a problem with him? Okay, you bought it. I talked to the guy that you bought it from. He said he sold it to you. The only problem I got is with the guy that sold it to you, so I'm going to go sue him, but I'm going to pay you because I need my transportation. But instead, you done pissed them off, and now you don't have any transportation, and now they're looking at you like all you had to do was pay us. Like, what the hell is the problem? If you had a problem with the last guy, go talk to the last guy. We're just asking that you continue and pay your loan off based on the amounts listed in the contract. I don't know what the issue is, brother. I don't see it, honestly. I don't see how you got into all that over that. You know what I mean? I don't.
I understand. I appreciate it, brother.
I appreciate you too, brother.
So
love you, man. You know, everything I do in love, you know, I try to, I'm here to challenge us when we're on the wrong track and when we're kind of mixing things. That's my job, and that's what Brother Sharif is going to do. I'm always going to call you on it, but I do it in love. I do it to make you aware of how I see things, and I understand business. I'm a businessman. So I try to tell you all how they think, and how they act, you know, and how to transact and have intercourse. They got a right to do whatever it is that's going to make their company profitable, just like you would. If you got a gas company, you might be like, I don't want to use that gas anymore. I'm going to use 86 instead of 93. You know, but then the homeowner going to go, well, you know, your lawnmower kind of moves faster when you use that 96. Man, don't tell me what gas you use in my lawnmower. I'm going to get your grass cut. It just might take me a little bit more time, but whose time is it? And it's like you arguing about why you just ain't use the 93 gas and make the lawnmower go faster. Even you want to argue with me about it. You follow what I mean? So we just got to, you know, we can't do that, man. We got to think. And I hate that, you know, you put your transportation in jeopardy, man, because even to me it's sounding like I'm looking at, I'm like, what's the problem? Like, what's wrong with you? So you kind of got them skittish, man, and you kind of had them concerned. And, you know, hopefully you can rectify that situation by calling back and be like, look, man, I realize I was acting a little bit doofy. You know, I didn't understand. I was a little bit off the rocker. Let me work that out because I need my transportation. Let me pay you what you owe. That's being honorable.
Well, I'm suing them now for the simple fact, like I stated, you know, no, they never called me and told me anything. So I have the right to question. You see what I'm saying? I have the right to do that, you know, just to make sure that I'm protecting myself. And then a year down the line, he said, well, you
and, brother, there's a right way to do wrong, you know, and there's a right way to do right, and they got a right to make you transportationless too, you know, when they feel that their collateral is in jeopardy. So the smart thing to do is to be able to maintain your transportation and bring that lawsuit. I don't see what the problem would have been doing that. Maintain your transportation. Pay who you got to pay for now. You understand? Which is what I tell people with mortgages. Should I stop making my payments? Like, no, I'm not going to ever tell you to stop making your payments. Pay what you need to pay right now until you determine that you don't need to do so and you have some action that you're taking to ensure that when you stop doing so, you're protected. You didn't do that. You kind of put the cart before the horse, and now your transportation, now you're trying to go back and sue them. And I'm going to be honest with you, even if you sued the guy that sold the contract and wasn't supposed to, the guy that bought the contract is going to be like, what I'm supposed to do, let him have the merchandise that I paid for and not pay me because that guy did something wrong? No, that's up to the guy that bought the contract to go back and say, hey, man, I'm not getting paid because you sold this contract and wasn't supposed to. If you wasn't supposed to sell that contract, why you sell it to me? That's between them two. Not you got to pay regardless. It sounded like you were trying to find a loophole, and they knew you were trying to find a loophole, and they were just like, nah, we're going to take our collateral back. You ain't got no loophole.
Well, if I was trying to find a loophole, I wouldn't have never been paying in the first place. My only deal was, like,
but that's the first place, brother.
Had I paid the other company, then I didn't have any recourse. Because it's an implied payment. So now I can't
go
back.
I got you.
All right,
Keep me posted, brother, and let me know what happens. But, you know, I can already predict the results of that. And the results is you don't have your car, and you put a lot of money into it. And you probably did some things. You sound like a brother to take care of your stuff. Now you don't have your car. And what you're explaining to me is I'm looking at it. I'm just like, I'm doing a USEF now. They sound like they did everything right. You follow what I'm saying? And I know some people don't like when he say that, but I sound like they did everything right, brother. But let me know if you find something that you can get some damages out of. Keep me posted and share it with the community, you know, what you did. Peace, all right? All right, let's go to – I think I got everybody. I think that's the last call, 772-8574. Do you have a question?
Yes, shalom, Brother Sharif.
Shalom, Sister Holly.
Shalom. I really appreciate, I respect you for the truth that you give the Creator's melanin people so we can be restored physically and mentally. I mean, your information that you give, it's like way up there. And I just started listening maybe a month ago, I'm going to go back through your tapes. I'm going to write all this down because I want to be able to give this information to people. You know, you come in contact with friends and neighbors and associates, and they all have problems like this. And I want to be able to refer them to you by giving the truth that you gave me, that they'll be anxious, not anxious, they'll be, they will want to hear the truth that you're giving. This is heavy. This is on top. I mean, the Creator sent you to do what you're doing, and you're doing it right. And no one can ever catch you in words because you know the words to use. I'm seeing it all, brother.
Blessings, mother. I appreciate that. I appreciate the spirit by which you're delivering those sentiments, and I feel you. And that's what keeps me going, all right, because sometimes I want to stop. It's too much. But I appreciate that, and I hope, if nothing else, if I don't do another show, I'm hoping that just awakened the people and started a fire that's just going to spread, and the fire's in our spirit. So I appreciate you for saying that. I mean, I really do. And coming from a mother, the creators of this planet, that really resonates with me. Did you have a question? Okay, I must have lost the mother. Are you there? All right, I'll try to come back to her. She's having some phone issues there. Let's go to. Peace. Do you have a question? Peace.
Hello.
Hello. You have a question?
No.
All right. Let's go to 661-02. No, let's go to 704-4137. Do you have a question?
Yes. I did I checked my credit, and a debt collector was on my credit report.
You lying.
Hello?
You lying. He wasn't on your credit report. They was?
Yeah.
So you mean to tell me that a debt collector went and checked your credit? How you know they were a debt collector, brother?
Because I had a credit report before that, a couple of months before that. Try to keep a tab on it.
Uh-huh. And what makes you think they're a debt collector? Like, how you know it wasn't a creditor pulling your credit?
Because I called yesterday.
All right.
And what they told me was they were speaking about someone I had had a previous loan with.
Okay.
And they were trying to collect on behalf of them.
Okay.
Or maybe I'm just reading wrong.
No, brother. I mean, listen, don't take me seriously. I'm just challenging you because you sound a little passive. So when you come on a call, you know, I'm energy. I'm confident.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm that sunshine. So, you know, I'm growling the time. You understand?
I'm putting
roars out into the jungle in the universe. So when I say, oh, really? You had a debt collector? Yeah, that's a damn debt collector, Brother Sharif. I know that's who they are. You understand? You can test on it a little bit, man. Look at that damn debt. Don't be questioning me, man. I know it's a damn debt collector. That's all I want to know, is that you know what you know. Okay, so you seen that they violated and intruded into your credit file. You didn't recognize them. You know you hadn't done an application or you hadn't applied for any service. With them, and they pulled
credit.
Has it been within the last 2 years?
Yep.
All right, good. So you called them, and you determined that they were a debt collector, and you didn't have an account with them?
That's right. Well, they said
I
had an account, but I...
account, but not with them.
Right.
Right? All
right. Right.
So then they're a debt collector, so they owe you $1,000. Okay, that's called that impermissible credit pull.
Right.
Impermissible credit pull. They owe you $1,000.
Okay.
So you send them a letter, and you say, look, you know, I took the opportunity on my day off, or I'm not working, and I'm looking for some debt collectors that can pay me some money or supplement my income to afford the country to kind of put the economy back together if I rely upon that. And I noticed that there was an intrusion to my credit file by your company. Now, I don't recall ever applying for services or credit with your company. And upon research, I determined that that is the case. So it appears as though you did an impermissible credit pull, which is not only a violation of 1681S2, you can go, but it's also a criminal violation pursuant to Title 18, punishable, okay, punishable up to 2 years in jail. Okay, so we can handle this civilly. And what I mean by civilly, meaning you and I can agree that you'll send me a $1,000 check within 7 days, or we can handle it civilly, meaning in a court of law, specifically the United States District Court for the county and state of wherever you're at, and you'll be liable for not only your statutory violations of $1,000, but also any cost and fees, okay, with that act, consistent with filing that action. So you can pay me $1,000 now, or if I happen to get an attorney, you're going to have to pay attorney fees and costs and all that. Or even if I do it myself, you're going to have to pay all my fees, all my cost of copies, my gas if I have to go to court, if I have to hire a paralegal, if I have to get consultation because I'm pro se and I'm really not used to that, but I need to make sure you don't do that again. And then I'm going to file a complaint because it's a criminal violation for you obtaining my credit report with all my identifying information, which is what caused identity theft. I don't know who you are. I don't know if you got Pookie and a couple of previous crackheads or a couple of Alcohol Anonymous people working there in no debt collection companies. And I know y'all just be some fly-by-night companies, and then you have all my credit information, my Social Security number, my date of birth, my address, my employment, all my other accounts. That's dangerous information. That's like somebody breaking in your house and taking your whole file cabinet. Okay? That's very serious information. That's why it's a felony to do so. So I'm going to give y'all 7 days to send me a check for $1,000, and don't ever do it again. You understand what I'm saying? Don't ever do that again. Mm-hmm. And destroy any information you obtained in there, and it better not be used for any other purpose than what I give you. And I didn't give you any authorization to do anything with it. So you just want to throw something in there, send them a letter, send it certified, okay, or go to FedEx online, FedEx it, send it to them, give them the 7 days, mark it on your calendar. They're going to respond, okay, if you put it that way. They're going to respond. Okay. More than likely, out of 10 times, 7 times, they're going to send you a check. I'm telling you what I know, especially if they know they had no business being in there. Some of them may fight. They may wiggle a little bit. Based on the language that you said it in, they might send it over to the attorney, and the attorney's going to talk to you and be like, okay, well, look, we'll give you $200. Be like, okay, let me tell you something. I don't have time to go back and forth with you. I'm listening to Brother Sharif's show. I'm busy. It's a four-hour show. This is what you're going to do. You're going to send me $1,000, or I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue your client. You understand? I don't have time to play with you. Send me the check, or we'll go to court, and then your client will pay a lot more. And that's it, brother. That's all you got to do. All right?
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it, brother. Keep studying. Thank you. All right, let me go back to the mother that was on. Mother, that you? 772-8574? All right.
Yes, Brother Sheree. Yes.
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 All right,
yes.
Mother, you're back. I lost you, so I wanted to make sure I went back to you.
Thank you so much. I just want to ask the question about reverse mortgages. How does that affect what's going on with mortgages?
That's an interesting question, and that's – that's one of the programs that I see a lot of our seniors and our mothers and fathers are dealing with. And I think it's just a bunch of Wall Street nonsense, you know, reverse mortgage. You know,
mm-hmm.
I really need to, mother, that's a good question. It's something that, you know, when our elderly ask those kind of questions, because they offer these things to our elderly. And, you know, it looks good. Elderly need the money. You know, they want to live. You know, their last journey of their life, they want to do, you know, what they want to do. I really need to look into that. I don't want to shoot you a flimsy answer. I really want to look into that and see how many cases has been brought because of these reverse mortgages. I in passing, I've heard information that it was just horrible. But, you know, they get our elderly to sign. Like, I heard the paperwork for that stuff is just outrageous. Like, and the elderly don't read. I mean, some of us on here 20, 30 years old and don't read the documents. I know the elderly's not reading all of that. And I heard these reverse mortgages, they actually come up there and they have some good-looking men and some pretty women knocking on the door talking about, I can get you $100,000 on your house on a reverse mortgage. You know, and then they take advantage of the elderly. But I'm definitely going to get you an answer. I have your number here, as a matter of fact. Let me write your number down. Yeah, I'd already written down. And I'm going to call you, and I'm going to get some information about that and see what I need to do to help people, even if it's you that is going through that. And let's reach out to our elderly and help them because they're losing their homes, too. And they've been in some of these homes for 50, 60. They've raised all
That's
of their
right.
kids.
That's
in
right.
these
and
homes, and they have
down
more.
To their children.
Yes, they have sentimental value, more than any actual value. So we definitely have to help our parents because I'm gonna be honest with you. I read another article that said that people from 38 and down, or seven out of ten. It was some outrageous numbers living back at home with their parents. Well, if the parents are doing these reverse mortgages and doing all this crazy stuff, you ain't going to have nowhere to go back to if you
get
out there.
Where are they
going to
go to? Yes.
That's right.
Yes, my brother.
You can't even go
brother.
Home and get them greens cooked. You can't even go get that chicken cooked because grandma, mother or grandma is going to be facing the same situation you face getting out there, and you should know better. And you know they don't know any better. You know, they just looking to try to help you out. And a lot of our parents get these loans, try to help out their dang kids anyway. Mama, I need some money. Mama, I need, Mama, I want to go to school. So, our parents being parents, will go and put themselves in jeopardy and debt in order to help our lanky tails and have us get ahead. And then we let them get a reverse mortgage. They don't even be like, well, Mama, before you do that, let me see. They just be like, oh, Mama, you can get the money, mortgage the house. We have to grow up. We really have to take care of our parents and look after them and check on them and make sure these things are not happening. I will have an answer for you next week. I'll put it on my list, and I'm going to address that. And since I will call you sometime tomorrow after the show to help you with that dilemma, if that's what you're in.
Yes. Well, you know what? I just wanted to put it out there for the elderly so the children realize that when they want to, borrow on their mother or their parents' home, that they have to consider and they have to look into it so they don't, it's their inheritance. Have an inheritance for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I really appreciate you, brother. I mean, I live in Florida. I'm originally from New York.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
But I appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Let me tell you something.
You have a wealth of knowledge. You have so much knowledge. Oh, wow.
I love Florida.
I don't know
what it is about Florida, but I'm telling you, Florida is my relaxation state. When I want to really get that, because I'm a Leo, I'm that sunshine and that water. My secondary is that water. When I get around that sun and that water, I'm like, I'm just like a lion, at the lake.
You get restored, brother Sharif.
Yes.
You get restoration. That's what happens.
Yes. And
so
that's what when I was in New York, I always wondered why all my family used to leave from New York and move to Florida. Everybody, that was the beeline. Moving out of New York. Where you going? We going to Florida. Oh, dang. That's like
you get tired
from...
of the snow, shoveling snow and all that stuff.
I know. But Florida is awesome. The energy in Florida, I don't know what kind of energy mounds it has, but the energy in Florida is like amazing. As soon as I get off the plane, it's just like, ooh. I'm like a lion in the sun. I'm like, I'm sucking all that in, and I'm rejuvenated. Come back, and I can go another 10 years. So, definitely I will get with you on that, Mother, and I have your number here, and you'll have that straight communication with me if you need something.
Yes, Brother Sheree. Restoration to you. Restoration.
Yes, thank you.
Shalom.
All right. Peace and blessings. Again, all honors due to our mothers and our fathers. We have to take care of them. You understand? They're the knowledge. They're the wisdom. We got to take care of them. We got to look after them. You understand? It's all of our responsibility. We out there running from, running at the seat of our pants, the way the Southerners say it. And we're not taking care of our parents, and they're falling into these situations because they've depleted all their energy, their health, their bodies to take care of us. and then we turn around and we forget about them because we're riding in the Mercedes or the BMW or we're living in the big house, and mother's trying to do some things to keep the soup on the table. She wants some new teeth, or she wants to fix her toe that's been broken since she's been carrying your fat butt to school. You understand? We leave our parents and let them enter into these contracts when they're not mentally capable to understand that which they're getting into. That's our fault. We gotta handle that. All right, last call. I got 10 minutes left until we go dead. Last call at 347-5676. Do you have a question?
Peace, my brother.
Peace, my brother.
How you doing? Yeah, I have a question. I received a letter from I believe it's a debt collector. And they said they purchased the account, and it's from a company named RGM Acquisitions. They're not clarifying themselves.
Yeah, they're debt collectors.
Yeah, that's what I looked them up, and that's what everyone was saying online.
Yeah. So when they call you, you tell them on the phone, they'd be like, this is RGM Collection, and we purchased the debt. I'd be like, congratulations. What debt did you purchase? I appreciate
you
doing that. Like, that's congratulations, man. You just out there buying and paying people. That's charity, right? Do you want me to give you a 1099? What are you looking for me? Because you better not ask me for any money. You understand? Who told you to purchase that? How do you know I owe that person? You understand
exactly,
what I mean?
Because I'm going to hit them with a debt validation letter. I'm definitely going to send them a debt validation letter. But could that letter be an offensive, defensive letter? Can I state, demand for verification, validation, then come back and say it appears you may have violated certain codes of 1692?
Yeah, you said it's an offensive, defensive letter? No, I love when I get those letters. I'll be like, so
okay.
I got this call from you on this date, pursuant to the TCPA, Telephone Protection Act. You called me, and you was attempting to collect the debt pursuant to 1692A4, right? And you kind of alleged that I owed you some particular debt. I don't know what that debt is. So, I'm hoping you can explain to me what debt you purchased that I'm unaware of. And pursuant to 1692G, I request that you validate and or verify the alleged debt so I can determine whether you have a legitimate debt. Just something simple. A one-pager. You should be happy because you're looking at me like, you're a debt collector. You actually called me and told me you purchased something, and you don't even know what you purchased. Now you're calling me to confirm that your purchase was good. Like, are you stupid or what? You called me before. You should have called me before you purchased it. You understand what I'm saying? And I could have told you, man, I don't owe them people that money, man. What are you talking about? Don't do that. Don't pay that off for me. But, I can send you a 1099, man, if that's what you want, and accept your gift. But if you call me and ask me for money, it's going to cost you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because you're making an assumption that you have improved. Like, don't call me after you buy something. You know what I'm saying? That's like your wife saying, oh, baby, I went and bought that car, but I want you to come check it out. I'd be like, you bought it? Yeah, well, why I need to check it out? Sound like it's going to be in the garage. Like, what are you talking about?
You already
own it. You should have called me beforehand. You understand what I'm saying? So, how you handle that, brother. Just a simple letter, that validation dispute. So, like, tell me what you bought, when you bought it, how you bought it, who you bought it from, and why you think that pertains to me.
There you go. I got it.
Because what if I say I don't have no debt with them? Or what if you say, I had a debt with them, but I didn't borrow that much money from them. Or I paid them and I didn't owe them that. You understand what I'm saying? But you already done purchased the debt. So you as a debt collector, what you going to do is if I say I didn't owe them that much, you going to go back to them and be like, hey, that man said he didn't get that much money from him. They're going to be like, we don't care. We sold you the damn debt. That's why we sold it to you for 3 or 5 cents on a dollar. Because we really don't know what he owe. You can make up what he owe. And if I was a debt collector, that's just what I would do. If I was shady, I'd be like, man, you borrowed $5,000, but you had the loan for 10 years, and you still owe $5,000. You understand what I'm saying? That's what I would do if I was shady. And I'd be like, and see how many of y'all, and there'll probably be several of y'all, that'll pay the whole $5,000 and not even go to the calculator and be like, wait a minute, how can I have this mortgage or this debt for 10 years and still owe the same amount or more? Many of us don't even look at that. We just be like, okay, can I make a payment arrangement with you? Or can I put $10 on it? Can I put $20 on it? And they be like, oh, yeah. We'll wait. We'll take it $20 at a time because we're getting the whole $5,000. You understand what I'm saying? Oh, sure, we'll be patient. Just sign this agreement with us. You understand? Now they lock you in.
Right.
Get
right.
me, brother?
So I'm just going to hit
That's
him with a verification
simple
validation
letter.
Simple
Maybe,
letter. You know.
Something real simple. Validate your debt. I don't know what you're talking about. Don't recall a debt with that company. And then you told me you bought something. I'm sure there's no return policy. You understand what I mean? So
go.
I'm sure whatever person you bought it from, you can't return it. That means you're going to try to prove to me all you can that I owe it. And I'm telling you, man, you shouldn't have bought that. Try to take it back if you got a receipt. You understand? But don't call me no more. don't call me no more.
I got it.
All right, brother. Peace and blessings to you. All right, we're going to go ahead and cut the show right now. I thank everybody for being here. I thank the Creator for giving us the opportunity, giving myself the opportunity. Hopefully everybody was blessed and uplifted by the information. Again, this show is in the spirit of love, truth, peace, freedom, and the pursuit of justice and uplift all of mankind. And we do that from the bottom of our heart here. We thank you all. You know, at High Frequency Radio Network, on behalf of myself and the other co-hosts, Brother Yusef and Brother Savage, we want to thank y'all for making us a very big network, and that's only because the Creator allows us and gives us the energy to go to the books, to go to the laws, to obtain information. We do this every day, all day, sometime all night and all day to make sure we have valuable information to share to the people, not things that's going to just sound good, but things that actually work. We're working hard as a network to bring you remedy and relief and some spiritual guidance as well, as my co-hosts do quite awesomely. I'll put it like that. So we look for y'all to come back to us next Tuesday, same time, 11 o'clock, God's will. We'll do this again. Call in early. Y'all have my email address if y'all need us. We do offer consultation, okay, private consultation. Webinars are available at a donation. Okay, I've sent out emails to everybody, explained to them the donation for the webinars. I have some pretty good deals if you want to obtain the information and study yourself and not depend on me or not have to come ask questions, because our webinars are very much in depth and will definitely give you a good fundamental foundation on how to have intercourse in the commercial world. Thank God for you. We'll see you next week. God bless.